handling NERSA, the regulatory body. I trust that everybody has got copies. And let me welcome also the department as well as NERSA. Can you have apologies?
Chairperson, only one apology. Honourable Moloto indicated that he is running late, but he will be joining us, Chair. And then also we've received an apology from the chairperson of NERSA, Chair. He won't be able to join us due to ill health as well, Chair.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I think it's appropriate that then we hand over to NERSA to take us through their briefing. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and greetings to Honourable Committee Member. Chairperson, an apology from our chairperson has been tendered. May I introduce the team I'm with today? To my left is Ms. Virginia McKenzie, Executive Manager and of course the CEO. To my right is Ms. Esther Ferrion, Senior Manager for Planning, and next to her is Mr. Zach Lombard, Acting CFO at NERSA. I will run the presentation.
Acting
Chief Financial Officer. Chief.
Oh.
We had a resignation. The Chief Financial Officer resigned in January. So we have an Acting CFO. Chair, I will run through the presentations. However, the presentation, the colleagues will assist me when we come to question time. There's the content of the presentation. Chair, what we've done is we've circulated a very comprehensive deck of slides in terms of the hard copy. In the presentation, some of the slides will not be canvassed in detail. However, in question time, members can refer to the specific slides, will be able to respond. We thought that we'd just try and hold it together for the committee. So we will cover, Chair, the framework for the strategic planning as well as the annual performance plans, the concept of planning that we utilize. We'll cover the usual around the vision, mission, and values and regulatory principles, our mandate. What we have achieved in the current financial year, just at a high level, we'll still be presenting the annual report and we'll go to details around that. The strategic plan for the next 5 years, the annual performance plan for 2012-13 to 2014-15, budget and funding. Cover a bit what challenges face the organization, some plans for the future, and some concluding thoughts. Okay, just in terms of background, NERSA, the National Energy Regulator, was established on 1 October 2005 in terms of the National Energy Regulator at 40 of 2004 to regulate the electricity industry in terms of the Electricity Regulation Act, the pipe gas industry in terms of the Gas Act, as well as the Petroleum Pipeline Industry in terms of the Petroleum Pipeline Act. So we are expected to implement our mandate and to proactively take necessary steps and necessary regulatory actions in anticipation of and in response to the changing circumstances in the energy industry. Furthermore, in executing our mandate, NERSA needs to ensure that the interests of both licensed entities as well as the end users are balanced. In terms of the PFMA, we are a Schedule 3A public entity. The framework for strategic plans and annual performance plans, we followed the framework that was published by National Treasury in August 2010 because this framework is applicable to all national, provincial, constitutional, as well as public entities, and it's applicable from the year 2012-13, so we have been able to comply right from the first year. That's the planning concept or the planning framework that we followed as issued by National Treasury all the way from the strategic, constitutional, and legislative imperatives all the way to our own operational plans at the bottom as well as individual performance agreements. There's our vision and our mission as an organization. The vision is to be a world-class leader in energy regulation and the mission is to regulate the energy industry in accordance with government laws and policies, standards, and international best practices in support of sustainable development. There are our values here. I'm going to skip over that slide. Regulatory principles as well, transparency, neutrality, consistency and predictability, independence, accountability, integrity, as well as efficiency. These are very, very key in the way we conduct our business as a regulator. Our mandate, as indicated earlier, is anchored in four primary acts. And Chairperson, I suppose it's important for us to mention the fact that the other three acts, or the three acts, so you've got the National Energy Regulator that establishes the National Energy Regulator, the Electricity Regulation Act anticipated its own regulator, the Electricity Regulator, the Gas Act anticipated a gas regulator, and the Petroleum Pipelines Act anticipated the Petroleum Regulator. However, the National Energy Regulator consolidated all these regulatory positions into the Energy Regulator. And I mention this because what that does is that it makes our mandate very interesting. In the one industry, the mandate is regulating and creating certainty, and another one is promoting participation of the private sector, and another one is opening up for transformatory purposes. So the mandate comes in slightly nuanced based on the fact that you've got three different acts regulating three different industries. We also have levies acts that enable us to be funded, and those are the three acts that enable us to levy the operators for purposes of our ability to be funded. And then the three acts that we call facilitating. It's the PFMA, given that we operate in the public sphere, the promotion of access to information, given that we are in a sense an administrative body, as well as the promotion of Administrative Justice Act. At a high level, Chair, there are lots of details here. I'm not going to talk to each and every bullet. Key achievements for the year 2011-2012 in relation to the industry. Electricity industry regulation, tariffs, we have dealt with the municipal tariffs. We have approved the revised tariff for the third year of the MYPD2 for ESCOM. And Chair, we felt it's important that we mention the fact that we concurred with the Minister of Energy in terms of Section 34 of the Electricity Regulation Act on the procurement process for the renewable energy process.
And just a small thing. You say you approved 177 municipal tariffs. Out of how many licensed municipalities? Just to keep that in mind.
It's 184, Chair.
So in a sense, it's 177 municipalities out of 184. And the rest didn't make any application.
Yes,
thank you.
We do tend to see that, yes. There are a few. Remember, out of 187 total electricity distributors in the municipal environment, 184 are licensed because others have entered into bilateral where one municipality distributes for another. So the total we're looking at is out of 184, it's 177. So it's seven that haven't applied.
I hope one of you will note that because that three difference is a new thing to me. I don't know with other members.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting, you know, because then I think all along other members, they only knew 184. But it's interesting just to pick up that small tree.
Yes, exactly.
If at the end you could just elaborate on it, how do they go around with that bilateral, these three, licenses?
Okay. Thanks. Then in the generations part of the value chain on electricity, one of the key things we are proud about is the fact that we conducted the public hearing on license applications by the 28 preferred bidders that came out of the DOE Renewable Energy IPP procurement process. We held this in the different locations in the country where those licensees would be located. There are other five generation licenses that we dealt with. In relation to the distribution part of the value chain, one of the key activities we conducted in the year under review was to mediate a dispute between the Chewelo communities and ESCOM. And Chair, we are happy and rather proud of the fact that, in fact, that dispute was settled. The community had issues with the meters. They raised the technicalities with the meters. And they said that as they were disputing, as the two parties, they indicated that they'll only accept the decisions by NERSA. So we took the meters, took them for testing with SABS, and brought them back and reported on the results, and the community accepted the results, and of course ESCOM accepted those results. So we're feeling that as a regulator, our role is becoming a little bit beyond the office. Yeah.
What are the results?
Chairperson, the allegation at a high level was that the meters were corrupted, so they were counting faster than they should be counting. When we took them to SABS, the meters had been appropriately calibrated and properly calibrated, and they had operated as calibrated for the period under review. Yeah. I think essentially, Chairperson, is members of the community not understanding how the prepaid metering system works, and in some instances, there were some other people who were not quite straight with the community. They had promised things that they were not able to deliver, and all sorts of arguments were made in the district.
No, I can write a book about that. I know it's like the back of my hand.
Okay. All right, sir. The piped gas industry regulation chair, in that particular industry, we distinguish between pricing and tariff. Up until now, we have worked in a situation where the big player, essentially vertically integrated player, has been regulated in terms of an agreement. That agreement is coming to an end in 2014, and in terms of the Gas Act, the regulator is expected to approve a methodology for purposes of approving maximum prices for the piped gas industry. So as the energy regulator, we have now approved that methodology. And we have consulted and held stakeholder workshops before and after the methodology was approved. In terms of licenses, we've granted 5 licenses for the construction of gas transmission facilities and 2 licenses for the construction of gas distribution, and another two for operating, as well as 1 trading license. In terms of other areas of activity in relation to the piped gas industry, we conducted what we called a gas dialogue with players in the gas industry, and the purpose of this dialogue was to try and find out what hurdles are facing the investment community, so that we at the moment, one of our mandates in terms of the Act is to facilitate investment in gas infrastructure and competition in the gas industry and the growth of players in the gas industry. However, in the last 5 years, we haven't seen this growth. So we held a dialogue with the players just to understand from their perspective what they perceived as challenges. Chairperson, this report has been completed. We've just approved it as the energy regulator. It will go to the department, and possibly it's one of those items that we might want to come back and talk to the portfolio committee more in detail around.
You'll be very much welcome. I hope our secretary notes that down.
In addition to developing this to developing the methodology, one of the key steps that we needed to take as a regulator was to determine whether or not there is adequate competition in the piped gas industry. So the injunction in the Gas Act says that on determining that there's no adequate competition, the National Energy Regulator shall approve a maximum pricing methodology. We have conducted this exercise. It was very intense research that we went through. And the conclusion was that there is inadequate competition. We also sent this particular finding to the Competition Commission. They participated in our processes, but we also sent it to them, given that they're a competition authority. And in fact, they concurred with both our conclusion and our methodology. So we felt quite vindicated in a way. In relation to the petroleum pipeline industry regulation, we dealt with the allowable revenue application for Transnet, which this year happened at the peak of the implementation of the project. We approved an increase of 31.58% for that, when the operator had applied for 83%. We also approved a storage facility tariff for 9 licensees. This is an area that's very interesting here, because a lot of licensees and operators seem to contest whether or not they need to apply for licenses. So for us, we have seen this number growing, and we intend to grow it quite at pace. We have also, in terms of the other licensing activities, approved 3 construction licenses, 1 operational, and we have revoked 8 licenses as well. that was
can you go back? Can you go back again? Can you take us through the licensing? You said three construction licensing.
Yes.
One operating license.
Yes.
Revoked.
Eight. Yes.
What type of licensing? Construction or operating license is revoked.
Apologies, Chair. We should have stated that it's storage licensing. Storage licenses. The one thing that we have observed is that a number of, particularly the big oil companies, are getting out of storage, and we're seeing smaller players coming into that in that particular space. One of the things that's not happening is that we're not seeing enough of the HDIs coming into that space, but we have seen major oil companies getting out of storage, petroleum storage facilities. These ones in particular, we can even mention the operator. These ones are for Chevron. But we've seen the similar pattern from BP, Shell, and the other big players.
So you haven't approved them all?
We have approved them, Chair.
Oh, you have approved them?
Yes.
So you've approved everyone?
Then. We've approved everyone. The observation we're making is that we've just noticed that the majors are exiting that particular part of the value chain. So, Chair, now we'll focus on the strategic plan from 2012-13 to 2016-17. As indicated, Chair, we have followed the treasury way of planning, and it was a very interesting and a very challenging process. Having gone through the exercise, Chair, we concluded that the following are our strategic outcome-oriented goals, or oriented goals. One, to facilitate security of supply in order to support sustainable economic development in South Africa. Two, to facilitate investment in infrastructure in the energy industry, again, to support sustainable economic development in the country. Three, to promote competitive and efficient functioning of the energy industry in order to sustain economic development. Four, to facilitate the affordability and accessibility in the energy industry to balance economic interests of all stakeholders in support of economic development in South Africa, as well as a better life for all. And lastly, to position and establish NERSA as a credible and reliable regulator in order to create regulatory certainty. So those are the five strategic-oriented outcome goals. These are linked to the following 12 national outcomes, and this was a requirement. So set out your goals, indicate how they relate to the national outcomes, the 12 national outcomes, and then indicate your program that underpin those goals. So then of the 12 national outcomes, we relate to six of them, the even-numbered one. So it's the outcome number two, a long and healthy life for all South Africans. Outcome number four, decent employment through inclusive economic growth. Outcome number six, an efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure network. Outcome 10, environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continually enhanced. And lastly, outcome 12, an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service, as well as an empowered and fair and inclusive citizenship. So, Chair, those are the national outcomes, the 12 national outcomes, and we relate to six of those. What are the key strategic objectives then of NERSA as required in terms of the planning framework? The strategic objectives of NERSA expressed as the desirable end state of the energy industry are stated as follows. 1A, regulatory environment that facilitates investment in energy infrastructure. 2, ensuring energy supply that is certain and secure for current and future end users. Ensure that there's fair competition that exists within the energy industry, ensuring that the regulatory certainty exists within the energy industry. Ensuring that energy is accessible and affordable to all citizens, as well as ensuring that NERSA is established and positioned as a credible and reliable regulator. We've established six programs, and these programs, Chair, would then cut into, so on the horizontal side would be the programs, and then vertically it would be the different industries. So each industry must show how it will, or shows how it will execute on the following programs. So the one big program we've got is setting and or approving tariffs and prices. And that end or is advised because The Electricity Act says we set tariffs, however, the Gas Act says we approve tariffs. So we were trying to accommodate our mandate as expressed in the different laws that guide us.
Come again.
The Electricity Act enjoins us to set tariffs. The Gas Act only enables us to approve tariffs. And petroleum pipelines is wrong. We approve.
Throw me, please. Yeah.
Yes.
End up in case. Okay.
No, Chairperson, yeah. When we approve, essentially the operator will apply and indicate certain figures. We'll take those figures, investigate, and if those figures fall within the ballpark in terms of the rules that we apply, then we'll approve. And it is different from setting, because with the electricity one, you almost go afresh and you set the term. Yeah. And Chair, you'll see that, you know, at some point when you talk about really the long-term life of NERSA, ideally, in the long term, it would be better if the core underlying acts are aligned and streamlined and are placed at some place where the authority of the regulator, the mandate of the regulator, is consistent across the three. But we're not talking about that now, Chair. We're just distinguishing the current enabling environment and indicating what it enables us and allows us to do. So the second program is licensing and registration. The third one, compliance monitoring and enforcement. Fourth one relates to dispute resolution, including mediation, arbitration, and the handling of complaints. Five, setting of rules, guidelines, and codes for the regulation of the three industries. Again, the last one relates to establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator, because we do believe that this is quite a key strategic program. What we then do next is to highlight what the strategic objective of each program is. And again, I refer back to the fact that this is the planning framework as issued by National Treasury. So in relation to the setting and approval of tariff program, the objective is to ensure that municipalities, and now this is in relation to the electricity industry, so this is where we get the grid. In relation to electricity, the setting and approval of tariffs, the objective would be to ensure that municipalities are sustainable within the ring-fenced electricity businesses, and secondly, to ensure that ESCOM is sustainable and that the electricity supply industry in general is sustainable. So, and the EFI would include every other player in the industry. In relation to licensing and registration, the program objective is to control entry and ensure an orderly development of the electricity industry. For compliance monitoring, the strategic objective is to ensure compliance with the quality and reliability levels, to ensure the compliance with the quality and reliability requirements, as well as to ensure efficient operation of the licensed activities. Program 4, dispute resolution. The objective of that program is to create a fair balance between the needs of all stakeholders in the industry. Program 5, setting of rules, guidelines, and codes for regulation to ensure non-discriminatory access to the electricity infrastructure in the country, particularly important with the introduction of IPPs, and secondly, to facilitate investment in the ESI. The last program, number 6, establishing an efficient and effective regulator from an electricity industry perspective. We mean that we need to facilitate the effectiveness of NERSA in the electricity industry, or to improve the effectiveness of NERSA in the electricity industry. When it comes to piped gas, it goes as I see that. Program 1, setting of tariffs, setting and approval of tariffs. The objectives are to ensure that we approve prices in line with the published price methodology, to approve and monitor tariffs in line with the published tariff guidelines, and to implement price and provisions of Schedule 1 to the agreement, and that's the special dispensation that's currently applicable to one of the operators in the country. Program 2, licensing and registration. The objectives are to process all license applications within the statutory deadline, to register gas imports and production, to develop the non-financial reporting requirements of the regulatory reporting manual, to propose and implement a strategy for gas-to-power component of the IRP 2010, to propose to the policymakers the implementation strategy for liquefied natural gas, and to research alternative gas sources from specifically compressed natural gas, shale gas, and coal-bed methane, as well as underground coal gasification.
Hang on, the last one. Evo. Can you go back? Yeah.
I've gone first.
Oh, sorry.
Which sorry. To research alternative gas sources.
Yeah, I'm going to what do you research?
Chairperson, we do realize that some of these gases have begun manifesting in other parts of the world. We're not seeing them developing here in the country. And to the extent that they've come up, there's been quite some heated argument. So we believe that as a regulator, we can undergird that argument with providing some data around those types of gas sources. So there's something called CNG, compressed natural gas, which is a logical form of the gas. If you look at the value chain of the gas, it's not difficult to move from natural gas to compressed natural gas. However, the way the act was written, CNG was not specifically mentioned in the gas. So one of the things we'll be recommending is that the Gas Act needs to recognize more forms of gas than what it has at the moment. There are issues of the shale gas in the Karoo, where there's some very robust debate in the country around the technology of extracting that. There's issues of coal-bed methane, where other operators are telling us that they could develop technology to trap the coal-bed methane before it is before the coal is mined, so that they then use it to generate electricity. Some research, we believe, needs to be done into that. So as a country debate, we just have got the data, as well as underground coal gasification. So coal can be turned into gas whilst it's still underground. And then extracted after that. And those are some of the areas where we believe that we can assist the debate by putting up more information out there. Okay. Biogas would also be part of it, but the biogas is sort of almost established.
Well, you don't have many.
Yeah. Okay, we can add that too. In relation to compliance and monitoring, in the pipe gas industry, monitoring the supply of the 120 million gigajoules per annum from Mozambique to South Africa in terms of Schedule 1 of the agreement, to enforce license conditions with regard to competitive prices and conditions, to analyze compliance with the regulatory reporting manuals, and to determine and publish uncommitted capacity in transmission pipeline and storage facilities. And that last one, Chair, would be very key in terms of the transformation mandate of NERSA in the past gas space of introducing previously disadvantaged players. In terms of dispute resolution, in the past gas industry, the objective there is to ensure fairness and equity in the past gas market. Program 3, setting of rules, guidelines, and codes to provide stakeholder education and information sharing and to develop align relevant legislation and implement an HDSA scorecard. HDSA is against the historically disadvantaged South African scorecard. As indicated, we're not seeing the levels of transformation we're hoping for, as the country was hoping for in that particular space. Program 6, establishing less as an efficient and effective regulator in the piped gas industry. We need to make sure that certain regulations and legislative review is conducted, and we will approve comments and assist the department and the policymakers in that regard. But also, we need to ensure that we promote a level of understanding of energy regulator decisions to stakeholders. We have had some interesting reactions to decisions that have been taken by the energy regulator. In the petroleum pipeline industry, the strategic objective of the different programs, again, I'll start with program 1, setting an approval of tariffs and prices. The objective is to set and approve tariffs in accordance and in line with the published methodologies, to set and approve tariffs that facilitate affordability and accessibility whilst balancing the economic interests of all stakeholders. In relation to Program 2 licensing and registration, to decide on license applications for pipelines, loading and storage facilities within the statutory deadline, and to decrease the number of unlicensed activities. And Chair, you'd probably be surprised what that is about. Of the three industries, the highest levels of contestation we have seen are in the petroleum pipelines industry, where operators still do not accept the fact that they have to apply for licenses for their activities. And we have a very robust program to ensure that everybody who's out there comes in within the ambit of the Act. And in fact, we won't even argue that we should be given an ability to act against those people who choose not to be licensed.
Formally now, I'd like NERSA to furnish this committee with a list of those who still pursue business activities whilst they are unlicensed.
We will do so, Chair.
Please give us the details.
We will do so.
Thank you.
In relation to compliance monitoring and enforcement, the objectives of the program are to monitor and enforce compliance with construction license conditions, to monitor compliance with HDSA ownership level requirements within the petroleum pipeline industry, to monitor compliance with third-party access legislation requirements, as well as to investigate compliance with common carrier rules. And Chair, the last bit would be a bit like, you know, IPP access into the network. So in petroleum pipelines, they're called common carrier rules. So the infrastructure belongs to operator A. However, other operators need to be enabled to utilize the same infrastructure, but the rules and the charges thereof must then be finalized, and that's what we're talking about today.
A little bit more on the last second last bullet.
Chairs the same thing, third party access. So in the first place, you must allow other operators to be able to use infrastructure that belongs to one operator. And once that has been done, then you must write the rules such that they are clear and everybody knows what they must pay for. Program four, dispute resolution, including mediation. Again, there to investigate complaints regarding non-compliance with legislation and license conditions. And then the setting of rules, guidelines, and codes for regulation. The objective there would be to publish licensing guidelines and to publish tariff guidelines and amend as and when required. In relation to the last program, Program 6, establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator from a petroleum pipeline perspective would be to enable NERSA to investigate the bottlenecks or the constraints in the petroleum pipeline infrastructure in Durban, so the code, to maintain and update and report on inland supply forecast model, a 6-monthly report, to review legislation affecting the petroleum pipeline and recommend changes where applicable, and to publish relevant industry data. So this particular area in the petroleum pipeline space is around ensuring a security of supply, particularly for the inland portion of the country. In the cross-cutting program, establishing NERSA as an efficient and an effective regulator would mean, or the objective thereof would be, to ensure that we benchmark the regulatory decisions against international best practice, to enable us to determine the impact of regulatory decisions so that we are then able to react appropriately, to develop the research agenda for the organization on other new sources of energy, to harmonize regulatory processes within the organization and increase regulatory process efficiency, to empower stakeholders with relevant energy information, knowledge as well, and lastly, to influence the energy sector policy development as well as amendments to legislation. At an organizational level, the Program 6, establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator, the objectives would be to create an efficient and effective world-class organization to establish NERSA as an employer of choice, to position and promote a good image of NERSA, and to improve effectiveness of the financial processes, systems, and procedures. So that was at a high level, at a strategic level. Now we get into the details of the annual performance plan. We will look at 2012-2013 to 2014-2015. Again, we'll cut it by industry. Yeah? This is the portion of the presentation where we do not go into all the detail that is available on the hard copies that members have. So here we'll just do a high-level summary. However, in the question, we're happy to deal with the specifics of each of the industry programs. So at a high level, in terms of setting an approval of tariffs, we've got 11 KPIs in the electricity industry. Licensing, 1 KPI. Compliance and monitoring, 3. Dispute resolution, 1. Setting of rules, guidelines, codes, 7. And establishing NERSA as an effective and efficient regulator, 1 KPI. Under program 1 for electricity, those are the types of issues that we'll deal with. ESCOM multi-year price determination, municipal tariff approval, implementation of inclining block tariffs, implementation of the reporting, regulatory reporting manual, as well as dealing with issues relating to free basic electricity. So here you see I've skipped a few of the slides that are in the deck. Going to program 2. Under program 2, licensing and registration, the key issue there is the timely processing of license applications, and at the moment we're still staying with the regulatory timeline. We do believe that at some point we can improve those timelines. Program 3, compliance, monitoring, and enforcement. Conducting of compliance audits, implementation of action plans, as well as ensuring compliance with prescribed conditions. Those are the three key points that we'll look at under Program 3. The Program 4, dispute resolution, including mediation, arbitration, and handling of complaints. There's a timeliness as well of dealing with complaints. This is an interesting area, Chair, where we're finding overlap with the newly created Consumer Commissioner, and we are managing that overlap with the Consumer Commissioner around the complaints in the electricity space. Program 5 has got...
Can your department at some stage share with us a resume of those complaints?
Yes.
Just circulate it amongst members, just for us to understand what kind of complaints they had. Not necessarily come there for a meeting or whatever, but
yes,
just send it through the committee secretary electronically.
We will do that. We do report to the regulator as well, so we do have a report that's ready that
okay.
We can send to
thank
the
you.
In Program 5, we're looking at setting of rules, guidelines, and codes for the regulation of the electricity industry. So there's a grid code which we administer jointly with the operator, and we play a key role there. Then the development of rules, as well as the analysis of transmission development plan. Under Program 6, as indicated, Chair, in the electricity space, it's more around educating the public and ensuring the establishment of end-user forums by all the operators in the country. In the past, there's industry regulation. There, Chair, in terms of setting an approval of tariffs and prices, we've got four KPIs, licensing, 8, compliance monitoring and enforcement, 5, dispute resolution, 2, setting of rules, guidelines, 2, and in relation to establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator, we've got 3 KPIs. What each of the KPIs contain as key areas of focus: approval of maximum prices, approval of transmission and storage tariffs, timely calculation of the aggregate prices, and the timely calculation of fossil gas prices for the compliance report.
Why even specific SASOL?
Chairperson, specifically SASOL, because SASOL is a vertically integrated private operator in the gas space that was the first to bring gas from outside the country. And given that they were the only player in that space, there was an agreement that was reached at the time when this project was conceptualized, and a special dispensation for regulating Sasol was entered into, Chair, and Sasol is regulated in terms of an agreement. And there's a particular pricing methodology that's used there, and it is called the market value pricing. We do find that it is quite important for us to focus on this area because we have experienced a number of non-compliance instances by Sasol.
Hang on. Yeah. I think a lot of members are really learning more about NERSA these days. Once again, just get that relevant department to send us one two-pager on all those things that Sasol has not complied on.
Okay.
Even if they were approved, but just a resume of that. Thank you.
We'll do it, in fact, Chairperson, this one might well be worth the committee's time to delve into as a session as well.
Come again?
I'm saying this particular area of past gas in general is an area which the committee might want to spend some time on. We will send this report, but there are quite a number of things in that space.
What? Now you're triggering something. I think some stage, it was LPG. I thought we would go back on the members, maybe on the third term on LPG. Mm-hmm. Probably what Mrs. Pindile is saying, in a sense, is that let's tackle gas as gas.
Yeah.
Then within that, we'll look at LNG, compressed, shale gas, you know, all those things. Mm-hmm. What's happening in each and every one of them? And probably we may have to approach them in different ways, and amongst others is that when it comes to pipe gas, because already there is some more or less some stable or mature industry or semi-mature, whatever it is, then we can take up those issues, as you see. Can you keep that in mind, Eriko, for the third term? Short sentence.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. And also, sir, that first bullet, that methodology for maximum pricing, it's one of those areas where we'd like to talk to the committee about, for the committee to understand how the pricing works and pricing and tariffs work in the gas industry.
On that one, just keep in mind, when is it? I don't know if you remember. Okay. Sorry, I don't want to break you from a train of thought. You see, I wanted us to look at energy pricing in full.
All of it.
But it seems the department, Mamzungu, is revising electricity pricing policy, isn't it? Electricity pricing policy. So we're forced to an extent now, Honourable Members, to backtrack a little bit, to take, we'll have a session on that, just concentrate on electricity pricing policy, because that's what the department has done. But we must keep at the back of our minds that down the line, we still have to go back and look at energy pricing as in the regime as a whole, you know. But we'll take into account what you're saying, you know, the use of maximum pricing at the stage when we will be, I'm sure we'll be invited as well, when we will be addressing the revised policy from the department.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chan. Program 2 for piped gas in licensing and registration. Again, issue of timely processing of licenses and registration applications, as well as implementation of decisions. Investigation of the industry to identify unregistered import and production activities. The development of the non-financial components of the regulatory reporting manual. Again, to ensure that...
I'm sorry, maybe members just have to be interactive here. There's a lot that NERSA is bringing. What's unregistered import?
There are people who are importing and producing gas who haven't registered in terms of the gas act.
In what form do they import it? Bottled or what is bulk transporting?
Mm-hmm.
In what form?
Mostly, I think it's vehicles. They put it on tankers, specialized tankers, and then move it across borders.
And still not register? Okay.
The act requires that they register, not be licensed.
Okay.
And
Chair, maybe not to maybe because there was the answer to the question to that later, but maybe just the link between where the department.
Maybe where the link where the department and NERSA actually on these things do fit in, because when you bring in something, there are certain rules and regulations within the country. And you know how the synergy, you know, how do you give before the other, you know, the cart before the horse or the horse before the cart? I just would like to understand how that fits in.
Fine. Not now, because that's Mam Zunga, I hope you have noted that, ne? Sure, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Well, we're on the development of the non-financial components of the regulatory reporting manual. To ensure that we get an approved implementation strategy for the gas-to-power component of the IRP 2010. So the IRP contains a requirement that a certain quantum of electricity would have to be generated from gas, but we just need to ensure that we assist in getting to a point where the implementation strategy for that is finalized. We'll approve it and we'll send it to the department. Again, Chair, an approved implementation strategy for LNG, as well as conducting research and producing those research reports on alternate gas sources. Program 3, compliance monitoring and enforcement. Assessment of volume balance reports. And at the moment, those are the components of the agreement that we monitor. Conducting audits of the ROMCO pipeline, conducting investigations into operators and into the market in general, ensuring that the compliance with the regulatory reporting manual, the components that have been approved, and particularly the financial, and reporting on uncommitted capacity in the gas space. Program 4, dispute resolution. Again, there is both, it's about timely processing of received complaints as well as processing of investigation. Program 5, setting of rules, guidelines, and codes. In this particular industry, we're still focusing on stakeholder workshops and we will develop and have an approved and implemented HDI scorecard, because we believe that unless we develop a scorecard, it will take much longer for the industry to transform as contemplated. Program 6.
Before I forget, there will be hundreds of questions. Just go back. Just repeat the last point.
To ensure that for purposes of past gas, there's a developed and approved as well as implemented HDI, historically disadvantaged individual scorecard.
Outside what DTI does?
No, Chairperson. It's not going to be outside what the DTI does.
Okay.
But this one is industry specific, so we would like to enhance the monitoring capacity of the country in that sense. Our own act says that we must monitor this, but we are working with the DTI to ensure that we're not duplicating.
Sure.
Yeah. As indicated, in relation to Program 6 on gas, the big issue is reviewing the gas act and ensuring that it is enhanced to better position NERSA to deal with issues in that space. We'll ensure that we have approved comments from NERSA that we've submitted to the policymakers and continue to engage stakeholders through workshops on specific areas. In the petroleum pipeline industry, again, going back in terms of the program, setting an approval of tariffs, we've got 5 KPIs, licensing 2, compliance 4, dispute resolution 1, setting of rules and guidelines 4 KPIs, and establishing license 6 KPIs. Program 1.
But your colors are too dark. That's very unlike NERSA.
My apology, Chair.
We apologize. Program 1, setting an approval of tariffs and prices. Again, setting of the petroleum pipeline tariffs and approval of storage and loading facility tariffs. So you see, Chair, where the setting and approval comes in. and then the implementation of regulatory reporting manuals. In that third bullet point, we have made quite a lot of progress with a very high number of operators having implemented the reporting manuals and, in fact, going to the next phase thereof. Program 2, licensing and registration, timely processing of license applications, as well as investigation of suspected unlicensed activities.
I like that one.
Can see, at this time we're being careful. At this point in the planning session, we're being careful. But this is another area. Petroleum pipelines is another area where there's still a number of unlicensed activities. And so this one is an interesting one. The one particular instance we had of an entity that hadn't applied for a license and we told them to apply for a license, we actually went out as the energy regulator to go in and visit the operations of this entity. And we found that it was a manufacturing concern. The guys were recycling used oil. And there was as part of the process, there was a component of storage, but it's not storage as contemplated in the Act. But the initial investigation we've done, we advised that those people need to have a license for their activity. So there's a genuine confusion in this particular area because some of the processes are quite interesting and complex relative to the mandate in the legislation. Program 3, compliance monitoring and enforcement. Again, that is timely completion of assessment reports, ensuring HDSA or HDI reporting, third-party access reporting, as well as common carrier investigation. Program 4, for petroleum pipelines, we're just looking at timely processing of complaints. Program 5, setting of rules. Again, see division slightly behind. Publish licensing guidelines, publish tariff guidelines for storage facilities, to publish the petroleum pipeline tariff methodology, as well as guidelines to the approved certain regulatory asset base. Program 6.
Before we get confused on some of the things, you guys have got lots of
guidelines.
I don't know what to call it. What is that at the end? Starting regulatory asset base. It's not just a regulatory asset base, it's a starting.
Yes, sir.
What does that mean?
The starting relates to the petroleum pipeline industry, particularly that pipeline from Durban to Joburg, is an old pipeline. We needed to raise funds. We needed to assist the operator to raise funds to be able to construct a replacement pipeline. It was important what the starting regulatory asset base was, or how that thing was valued at the starting point of the calculation of the tariff going forward. And therefore, we realized that going forward, this remains a permanent challenge in this industry because you don't build pipelines every 5 years or every 10 years. They often are very long-term and assets. There is a way of indicating in a methodology at what point in the life of this pipeline you're going to start calculating the asset base for purposes of calculating your tariffs going forward. So, Chair, you'd recall it's also there in the EPP in relation to Eskom assets. It's a similar concept. On Program 6, establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator, again, there's infrastructure investigation and reports on the main port, Durban, report on the inland supply forecast, report on the review of legislation, publish storage tariffs, benchmark study on storage tariffs, as well as publication of financial and tariff information that is published. On cost-cutting regulatory issues, the KPIs are 7, and all of them relate to the establishment and the positioning of NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator. What are we talking about there? Benchmarking on regulatory decisions by category, each of the categories of decisions we take, and doing an impact study of the regulatory decisions, research on new sources of energy, to harmonize regulatory processes, particularly amongst the different industries, to the extent that these can be harmonized, quarterly newsletters, stakeholder engagement and education, approved comments and proposals on policy changes. So the organizational ones, with your permission.
Harmonize regulatory processes.
Yes.
Are you going to take us through that at some stage, a little bit in detail?
So we can do that and look at the look on slide 86 on the handout.
Okay.
In terms of the detail of the program, the harmonization of regulatory processes. At the moment, within the organization now, we have...
You said 86.
We're looking at the organization in terms of harmonizing our own processes. We receive applications within the electricity space. There's a different process for that. There's a different process in gas. There's a different process in petroleum pipeline. Now, in some of these processes and regulatory approaches, for that matter, can be harmonized. We have a methodology for electricity. We have a methodology for petroleum pipelines. We have a methodology for gas. I thought you'll ask me how many methodologies you guys have. And at points, this industry, the energy industry, you can harmonize so that the players out there know that when we approach the regulator in South Africa, this is the methodology, and the exceptions become fewer. At the moment, we're still operating in the realm of high number of exceptions between the different industries. So we're in the process of analyzing the business processes, we'll then make proposals where these processes are similar and just make sure that we standardize for it.
Can you flag that one? Even for future. I think it's a very interesting issue to monitor, harmonization of regulatory processes, particularly for a mixed industry or mixed sector like this with old established mature industries and also emerging greenfield industries. You know, it's definitely an interesting area to monitor.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. And around organizational, Chair, as indicated, there are 8 or led to an efficient organization, and very quickly, Chair, the implementation of the business plan, increasing the number of KPIs met, staff retention, organizational structure, training and development, customer satisfaction, unqualified audit, and timely payment of creditors. And so you see that we still responded to some of our history as an organization in some of those KPIs. Can I then move here to the budget and funding for 2012-13? According to Section 13 of the National Energy Regulator Act, all accounts for the 3 regulated industries have to be ring-fenced. All direct costs attributable to an industry should be allocated to that industry, and the ratio of the staff complement attributed to the industry-specific functions is used to allocate the remaining, or what we call common costs, to the respective industries, and the common cost allocation ratio for electricity, pipeline, gas and petroleum pipeline is as follows: 58%, 21%, 21%. So as an organization, we have three different acts that enable us to levy the different industries. As an important principle, the 3 industries shouldn't be cross-subsidizing each other. For purposes of dealing with common costs, because as an organization, we're not going to sit and have 3 regulators, we have what we call common costs, and how we allocate those is that 58% of the costs are allocated to electricity, 21% to petroleum pipeline, and 21% to power gas.
And what happens when you keep on growing and adding more and more sectors? No, carry on.
Chairperson will possibly find a way of keeping this. It's a ring fencing methodology, and it's quite easy to calculate. You can assess the level of effort the organization is putting into the different industries, and you're able to get to a percentage. So, Chair, if you look at the budget, income is in the middle column there. You can see a very high amount that comes from electricity, fast gas, and then petroleum pipelines. We have that category other there with an asterisk, and this chair relates to the history of the organization. From previous years, including when we were still the national electricity regulator, there was some over-recovery from regulated industries. What we then did was to go through a process where we got national treasury approval to retain the approved the over-recovered amount, and what we do is we set it off against future recovery levies from the industry. It's been done in a phased manner, and we're now looking to expedite it so that we can remove this number and just deal with current figures. But in the past, the decision that had been taken in the organization was to recover and deal with the over-recovery over years. So as we sit in the current, in the next, in the current financial year, it's sitting, this is the last year, we're sitting at 28 million. We are looking to clear as well.
Yes.
We are looking to clear this amount for going forward, but that figure will not appear.
Some yes, I'm tempted, sorry. Allow me. You know, what comes in my mind is that NERSA is one of these growing institutions. We hardly, how many years? 7 years.
7 years of NERSA? 7 years of
NERSA.
Yeah.
With growing responsibilities.
Yeah.
And you talk of over recovery. But what comes in my mind is that how do you handle these growing responsibilities? Time and again, if you remember, you know, one a question got triggered when you say you do research on new energy sectors. Doesn't that demand extra resources?
Chairperson, it will demand extra resources.
I know it's unstructured questions, but it triggers, you know, a lot of questioning that here is an institution that's growing, you know, doing some work to an extent in the area where you have money, but also having a pull factor in new areas that are emerging.
Chairperson, the funding model or the funding formula is flexible enough. If you look at the basis on which we levy, if you look right at the end, we levy on the basis of volume. So whether it is the volume of electricity or volume of gas or volume of petroleum pipeline products. So if indeed that industry grows, the levy will grow because we're looking at the total volume at the end of the day. So we're not saying that it's not a problem, but we don't want to say that it's going to be a disabling problem. Some of the challenges that face the organization, Chair, I'll also do it by industry and high level as well. We are waiting the finalization of the proposed revision of the electricity pricing policy, as that would enable us to settle the MYPD3 rule and also refine our implementation of the internal block tariff exercise. Apart from the regulations on the revised new generation capacity promulgated in May 2011, there are no new legislative or regulative instruments that have been promulgated regarding the Cabinet's decision in 2007 that Eskom will be responsible for ensuring that adequate generation capacity is made available and that 30% of the new power generation capacity is derived from IPP. The ability of NERSA to enforce compliance is still constrained, okay, by lack of policy to impose penalties in cases of non-compliance. However, this is a matter that's adequately addressed in the amendment of the National Energy Regulator Act. So this will be history.
comparison.
So we'll work together to chase NEDLAC to conclude processing of ERA and NERA.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we are glad because the National Energy Regulator has dealt with it comprehensively in relation to the three industries. Currently, with the regulator, we take decisions, and we are expected to sit as a tribunal and preside over the same decisions. So the way the Act is being restructured, it enables us. It enables an excellent separation of roles, and we'll see a little bit more effectiveness. Because, for instance, some of the levels of non-compliance, they've taken place over such a long period, they've become repeat. And because NERSA, essentially, if you, in a manner of speaking, did not have the chief, you know, it was a question of persuading, getting people to do corrective plans and making sure they implement those, so basically double jobbing instead of doing a job once and get it right for the first time. So this for us it's been a big challenge over the years, and we're very glad the department has responded to the issues we've raised in that particular space. And in relation to the establishment of end user forums, there's just a small outstanding step on the department side where the minister needs to issue regulations, and these can then be established. Ensuring security of supply remains something that is on our radar screen. And we'll ensure that we work with the department and assist and take timely decisions to assist in securing security of supply. When it comes to distribution, we just like to point out that the multiplicity of distributors and the varying capabilities make the regulation of the distribution sector at best difficult.
Electricity distributors.
These are challenges we face in the electricity regulation.
Not piped, okay.
No, electricity distributors.
Electricity distributors. Thank you.
So what we're saying is that just the numbers. We were developing a plan for auditing these entities. Given the resource capacity we've got, we can audit all 187 in 5 year cycle. So by the time we finish the first year cycle, then you can imagine what happens to the lot that we did in the first year. And that's just the sheer numbers. So we're not complaining. We can do the work. But we're saying that...
I'm tempted to comment, but I'll reserve.
Thank you for reserving your comment. And then, of course, the issues of the carbon tax, which has an interesting impact on tariffs in the country, yeah? And that's all we'll say about that. In relation to the piped gas industry, challenges relate to the regulation of certain piped gas activities, not specifically catered for in the Gas Act. I've made this point already earlier, sir. Monitoring and enforcing social compliance with the regulatory environment, this is work. This is stuff we deal with on a daily basis. Private sector investment in markets for gas, what we have been able to glean from the dialogue is that private sector investment in infrastructure faces many hurdles, particularly the supply as well as offtake agreements. And that's something, particularly the offtake agreements, that's something that we can, it's within our reach to resolve that. And then some aspects of regulatory certainty, now regulatory certainty in the bigger context, not just NERSA as a regulatory entity. There are a number of regulators and regulatory activity that happens in the country. And in particular here, we'd just like to comment on that PASA issues that arose there. However, we will await a cabinet decision on how that issue is processed going forward. We also just like to point out that whilst this is happening in South Africa, we have noticed that one of the South African companies has taken a decision to invest a lot of money in mining shale gas in another country. And this was in Canada. It fell out on the slide. Petroleum pipeline industry challenges. Supply chain is regulated by different authorities and therefore, the coordinated regulatory oversight as a result of concurrent or adjacent jurisdiction is a challenge.
There are some challenges around the ensuring security of supply of petroleum, particularly to the inland area. That there are some issues of levers there that need to be addressed, Chairperson. The possibility of tariffs almost exclusively being used for capital expansion funding by some state-owned entities. So essentially, there's a national imperative that there needs to be infrastructure expansion. However, the funding thereof, if you look at all else that's in place, it looks like funding of the expansion will only be done through the tariff, and that has implications on where you peg the tariff itself. The next challenge relates to promoting access to petroleum storage facilities by historically disadvantaged South African wholesalers. And there is a number of issues, hence we're doing the scorecard, so we're able to cut through those. And then we just mentioned the issue of LPG, Chair. We're flagging the fact that there's a potential of shortage. It's not an area we regulate. It falls resorts under the department, but we do believe that there are levers that can be introduced to make sure that we are collectively a little bit more effective around the issues of LPG. And cross-cutting regulatory issues. So this is in the nature of life, and I'm not going to beat this to death. There's always external dependencies, there's always the legislative gaps, that's why we have review processes. And then that of information asymmetry, again, that's in the life of a regulator. Those are some of the issues that we deal with in that space. Organizationally, those are some of the issues that we have to deal with, and I'll highlight the issue of the acceptance of NERSA's role and mandate by regulated entities. We canvassed that earlier. Attraction and retention of requisite skills, although that's not, we're not seeing the high levels of attrition that we saw at some point in the life of the organization, so that's stabilizing. Yeah. All of those other issues are just issues that we'll deal with in the normal course of business. Moving towards concluding, Chair, some plans for the future at a high level again. The big one in electricity, Chair, would be the promotion of renewable energy in the generation mix. And the last one, Chair, preparation for MYPD3. And I suppose on that slide would be that last bullet, the rationalizing of tariff structure, taking into account regional pricing and geographical differentiation. This is now an issue that we must get into quite seriously as a regulator, given that it still remains a big challenge.
A little bit on that. Rationalized tariff structure, regional pricing within South Africa, or within SADC.
Regionalism,
it's subject to different interpretation.
Yes.
Let's just be clear. about that.
Chairperson, this is a definitely domestic only, and specifically speaks to those aspects that relate to distribution prices in the country. We still remain with a very high number of tariff structures, a high number of tariffs that are different. And we think that from a regulatory point of view, we should look at rationalizing and ensuring that regional tariffs have some bearing to the fact that they're in a particular region, as opposed to now where prices are so differential, you can't tell what actually forms the difference. I see you want me to say a little bit more, but I am resisting. I'm resisting going there. One of the objectives of the rationalization and the consolidation of the electricity distribution industry in the country was going to be there. And because that process is now not going ahead as originally planned, the regulator has some scope to assess that particular process, Chair, and we're saying that in embarking on this particular process, we can assist the country somewhat and assist ourselves in fact.
because it would make us more effective. We'll monitor fewer terrorist and terror structures than we are at the moment. In relation to the piped gas industry, educating customers in order to assist in the enforcement of market value pricing, to the extent that this remains the methodology until 2014, to implement a compliance framework for all license conditions, an integrity study on the gas pipeline, chair so that investment decisions are taken on time, and as well as benchmarking license conditions, given that this is a very nascent industry in our country. This exercise has started, and some interesting results are being yielded from that particular study. So what we did was, because the industry is new in the country, we then said, let's look at what other countries are doing, what kind of license conditions do they have, and those reports are beginning to come through. Secondly, second part of challenges in relation to the pipe gas industry, legislative review, and very specifically, definitions and provisions that hamper effective regulation of the industry, matters relating to infrastructure planning and construction licenses, tariff mandate, as well as licensing deadline. I think the challenge here is that we have a mandate in relation to transmission and not distribution tariffs in gas. And we just believe it was a pen that didn't go correctly. So we have a mandate to deal with tariffs, to approve tariffs in the past gas space. However, we do the high end stream. We're not doing that at the bottom. So the distribution tariffs are not what we're dealing with. And it does pose its own challenges in the regulation of the industry. And then share the licensing deadlines. There are some issues there, but as indicated, this is just to say, having implemented the Gas Act for the last 5 years, we have seen certain gaps, and we'll go back to policymakers. And we, in fact, this engagement has been going on for the last 18 months already around what we see as gaps in the legislation.
What was the prices down in 2010 of gas?
Which particular gas? The LPG.
Mm-hmm.
It was regulations here that were issued by the Department of Energy.
Then what are you complaining about?
No, sir. This is natural gas. This is natural gas. This is natural gas, sir. Sir, with natural gas is experienced by customers beyond the distribution point, and we're just saying that. So, in the value chain of this industry, the regulator doesn't have authority on the last leg, and that presents challenges. But this is natural gas, not LPG gas. There are areas in the country, Chair, very few, but there are areas in the country where people still use gas directly. So the old suburbs of Johannesburg, Hillbro, and the surrounding Parktown, and those areas, Houghton, people use gas, piped gas, for heating and for cooking, and there are some businesses in the country, in fact, who would rather move to gas than the hospitals, for instance, do feel that they could use gas more effectively than electricity in some of their applications. So it's that part of the matter that we're not regulating. And then share the transition. We have to manage the transition to regulating maximum prices. As I had indicated earlier on, the CASEL agreement lasts until 2014. After 2014, the methodology kicks in, and it's an interesting transition to manage. We have started already. So we determined inadequate competition, approved the methodology, and now we've gotten we are now beginning to engage with industry to prepare for the implementation of the methodology. And we're starting now because we wanted to give ourselves enough time towards 2014. And then monitoring compliance with license conditions is something that we do as a matter of course. The petroleum pipeline regulation, monitoring the escalations in costs, as well as the delays in construction of new infrastructure. We know what the impact thereof was. To monitor and manage the first possible tariff spikes through tariff structure, monitor compliance with license conditions, facilitate market entry for historically disadvantaged players, as well as facilitating third-party access. Chair, these are just cross-cutting issues. And nothing stands out there, Chair. Ordinary business.
And in conclusion, Chair, we'd like to thank the Secretary for the opportunity to present this, our third plan for the next 5 years. We do wish to point out, Chair, that we are still a relatively young regulator. We are refining our processes. Steep learning curve in certain instances. We are also very conscious, Chair, of the burden that our regulatory activity could impose on the operators, on the consumers, on the economy as a whole. So we are sharply conscious of that, and we are seeking to minimize it at all times. And we are striving to ensure regulatory certainty and to ensure that a conducive environment for attracting and ensuring orderly investment is created in the country. Chair. Thank you, sir.
Siyabonga. Honorable members, there it is. After such a voice. Welcome, Dr. Mloto. Go for it. Who's going to follow Dr. Mloto? Baba Kreling, Smale, Mungani must have something to say. To pay for your absence yesterday.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a long list of questions, so I'll try to be pretty quick.
No, take your time.
We still have some time.
We want to make sure that out of this meeting we have a stronger NERSA.
page 20 of your strategic plan. You are on the big book, yes. After you did your situational analysis, you identified certain key risks and other economic factors. One of the risks that you identified was the increased consumption of energy by China. And NERSA's response to that would be to regulate the stockpiles. And secondly, something linked to that, would be also I would assume the second intervention would be increase the number of days that the coal stockpiles must be. My question is, are there any guidelines that you issue to ESCOM in terms of the determination of the necessary stockpiles? The other second, linked to that would be, why are you increasing our concern only about the consumption of energy by China, but India is also importing a lot of coal from South Africa. Why only China? Because the two main consumers of coal currently is India and China. So it'd be interesting to understand why are you leaving out India. On page 19, the risk that you identify is the US euro debt default and the impact on emerging markets. And your response would be to review the tariffs in line with these developments. Can you share some light on this? I just want to understand the connection between the two. Why would the default in euro markets have any adverse impact on the determination of tariffs in South Africa? The other one would be on developments in the Arab world. Your response would be to get statistics on oil demands. And the second area which would be of particular interest to me is to look at the referencing of the price of gas. And in brackets you're saying reference against oil price may make gas less attractive as oil price rise. If you could explain to us that relationship, and also why, because I assume this has to relate to the geopolitics of the Arab. If not the geopolitics, is only about oil discovery, why then don't you factor in the discovery of oil in Africa? The Economist of, I think, of 2 weeks back had a very interesting article about oil discovery in Africa. Chairperson, let me speedily move to the risk that you identified under petroleum pipelines. Can you assure, enlighten us on this one and assure us whether the risk that you identified as we move towards the end of 2011, which is last year, are still applicable or we have passed that phase? Because in page 27 of your report, you're saying the riskiest period, therefore, is up to the end of 2011. We have moved past 2011. And you secondly say Transnet pipeline, the Transnet's mitigation strategy until the new pipeline is finished is to use both the old and new pipelines in parallel as well as road and rail. Because you said it's not clear who will pay the $1.1 billion required to fund the line field, and this has resulted in the construction delay. Are all these risks that you have identified been addressed, or are they still applicable? Chairperson, let me move quickly to the issue of on price setting. I've lost my pages. I'm so sorry. On Eskom, maybe the CEO will help me to find the slide. Oh yeah, I found it. I just want to find out. I mean, for the purpose of us starting to understand the methodology of calculating the electricity pricing tariff better. One, you are saying one of the program KPIs is 20 guys. I don't know which page it is, but it will be for one of my slides, but yours might be different. Yes. It's talking about the percentage weighted average cost of capital achieved by Eskom. It's on setting and or approval of tariffs and prices. Now, the average cost of capital, my limited understanding, would then take me to a point where it says the average cost of capital would include the cost of debt and the cost of equity. The cost of debt, I'm quite comfortable that it's easier to determine. But the cost of equity, is this not the point where you want the shareholder of Eskom to be able to communicate to you and say, this is the type of, as an investor, this is the type of return we want from our asset? And my question would be, has the shareholder, throughout all this process, be able to communicate to you that this is the type of return that you are looking for from Eskom? And if so, what are the relevant details in parliament language? What do they say? Provide the relevant details. I still struggle to master that language, but let me try. The other question would be on the debt equity ratio of Eskom. There's some complicated formula here which I don't understand. Would you be able to enlighten us? Why would you be interested in knowing the debt equity ratio of Eskom? With a normal business, I would understand why somebody would be interested in that. But I would want to understand, in relation to Eskom, why are you interested in the debt equity ratio? I assume it's also related to the first point of the interest cover ratio achieved by Eskom, possibly the ability to service debt. So could you just be enlighten us on those areas? Thank you, Chairman.
Yes, sir. Thanks. Now, this is quite a document to process, and there's obviously lots of questions that come out of it. So I'll just try and run through a couple of them. The first one is that obviously we've heard from Eskom that they want to submit a longer price and determination document. Are we ready, is NERSA ready for processing such a multi-year price and determination? Or do we need to change legislation or regulations to allow for that? I mean, the current thing works on a three-year time scale. What needs to happen to allow NERSA to do that on a longer time scale on that front? And then on the storage of oil, I mean, can you give us a kind of rough picture of where we sit in with regards to storage of oil? Because obviously we have some shortages in the inland area, and from what I've understood is that we have a dearth of storage capacity, particularly for refined oil. What is the situation that we sit in with there? Also, it doesn't seem to be an incentive for oil companies to, in fact, store their refined oil at this stage because they have to pay tariffs which they see as exorbitant. So what are we going to be doing around storage of oil? I mean, we need to make sure that we have at least 28 days storage of crude oil and at least 21 days of refined oil. Are we at that position at the moment? And if not, what can we do to rectify that, just in terms of that particular issue? Then you mentioned that no legislation has been passed in terms of giving force to the fact that Eskom will build 70% of the new build and 30% will come from IPPs. What kind of legislation do you think is needed for this? I mean, what were you envisaging in there? I get the sense that there's an undertone of saying we need to move faster on this, or there's hurdles to this particular thing. What would be required to push that target ahead there? And then just on the just to come back to the crude oil as well. I mean, you mentioned the Middle East issues and the fact. I mean, most of our oil comes from the Middle East because I think that our refineries are set up to deal with sweet crude. What is the situation in terms of security of supply? If there is problems, particularly with Iran, what is our fallback option? Has NERSA thought about this? Have you put in place some kind of a plan to say this is how we're going to be sourcing the rest of our oil? Where else can we source it for? And have we got stockpiles in place to deal with if there's a particular crisis in the Middle East around that? Then in terms of LPG, I know that you don't regulate that, and maybe it's something which we should look at in terms of giving you authority over that. But, I mean, as the chair said, you know, prices came down, I think it was 2 years ago, but at the same time, and I use gas for cooking, I couldn't get gas. I mean, there was a shortage. And I think that there was a response from certain market players to say, well, if you're going to hold us to ransom on price, we're going to hold you on supply. And this is obviously something that we have to address. And what I'm hearing from LPG suppliers now is that they think another shortage is impending, particularly over the winter months. What can we do to rectify the situation with LPG? Because clearly, I mean, a lot of restaurants depend on this. I mean, it has a major effect on the economy once we have a shortage of LPG. Do you have any plans in place, or can you give us some recommendations as to how to address this particular one? And then lastly, just in terms of distribution, I mean, I know this is something that often comes up, and I know that nurses' hands are tied. But, I mean, in terms of you looking at the license conditions of particular municipalities, because you obviously don't have authority to set tariffs for municipalities, but you do have the power, I suppose, to remove licenses from distributors. And is this something that you're looking at, particularly if they're not conforming to at least invest in 5% of their revenue, electricity revenue, back into maintenance of their distribution networks? Is this something that you're looking at? Or do you propose that we actually look at this in a far bigger way? I mean, I'm just not seeing the leadership from national government to deal with this distribution crisis at the moment. And what would NERSA propose as a way forward in terms of dealing with the problems that we're seeing in many of our municipalities? Thank you. Yes, thank you, Chair. I think maybe I would like to understand your research on managing your risk when it comes to capacity of both gas and oil. I would presume that is probably done externally. What does it say? How do I get hold of that? Where should we be in both? I also would like to understand your Does your value chain for the pipe gas industry actually involve any activities in the addition of gas production and your gas storage and transmission? And how will that be taken into account when you're considering the actual pricing of the pipe, of your pipeline? Just need you to understand that a little bit more. Chair, I will come back now because I'm trying to bounce off certain things. Just give me a second round now.
Honorable Smala, I'll defend you and protect you by all means because it belongs to the same ICT family. No. Take your time. Bunga. We'll come back to you. Just switch off your mic.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, maybe the issues that I wanted to get clarity on in terms of the license storages that are being revoked, I'm trying to get to understand, you know. At some certain time when we went to do an oversight in Durban, there were a couple of, you know, historical storage companies who came up front to say they were looking for storages, but they refused an opportunity to do so because the owners of those storages couldn't be able to, you know, give them the access. I'm trying to check in terms of whose storages are those ones, and then what is the intention? Where are you going to give? Who are you going to give these licenses to? Are those probably those kind of companies who came forward going to be able to be assisted? The other thing, it's related to, I want you to understand that when you say in terms of your organizational strategic objective that you want to establish a NERSA that is an employer of choice, I'm trying to understand in terms of the shortage of skills that you are experiencing, that at the current moment you just informed us that your CFO has resigned. What is the meaning of that? And we must be able at least to understand how you intend to do that, because you know, going to have this competition outside. The other one relates to, maybe I don't know. Can you please give me the clarification or the abbreviation of ROMPCO? What is the meaning of it? Because I need to understand, you know. The other one relates to, you know, I wanted to ask you earlier, but you know, the chairperson has been trying to, you know, get to understand the issue of the methodologies that you were speaking about. In your slide 100, there's somewhere where you say your potential shortage of the LPG, you want to review the methodology there. I want to understand in whose favor that I'm going to review that methodology. This is a huge
the new chairperson. Well, the probably my last question is that around 2009, we raised a lot of queries in terms of the strength and the way that NERSA has been operating. At a certain extent, I became famous of something that I never thought I'd be famous of, and of which I don't like to be famous of that thing. Where I was questioning to say, NERSA in most cases has been found itself on the side of the line, whereby, you know, those operators that you're supposed to regulate, they are the ones who gives you, you know, instructions, who leads you towards, you know, or dictates to you. I want to understand, because in one of your slides you were saying you're going to ensure that your monitoring process and enforcement of compliance is going to be strengthened. I want to check in terms of what happened. Which one have you managed to strengthen the compliance so far? You know, one of your those achievements of yours. Because as I raised those things, I think in the last financial year as well, I raised that question to say this thing still persists, whereby, you know, you find those major role players, they dictate to you how to regulate. Have you managed to correct some of these matters, and do you have any achievements that you can share with us? That's
good. Material, and then I'll come back to Mr. Smale and Mr. Ross.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Chairperson, I've got a question here about on page 39, the setting program one, setting and or approval of tariffs and prices. Municipalities get the approval from NERSA to set their prices. And what I want to know also is about the basic, free basic electricity. Because there are municipalities in the rural municipalities. There's a municipality there where, which they say they give people only 20 amps. The whole electricity, they electrify the house with 20 amps. Then I want to know where does the free basic electricity fit in, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, our free basic electricity is 50. So if they've got only a space for 20, how do they get the disadvantage people get their free basic electricity? Thank you.
Let me take Mr. Ross and come as a second round. You found your question?
Yes.
Okay. Is the iPad functioning well now? All right. Yeah, okay. Mr. Ross.
Chairperson, thank you, and apologies for being late. I was not aware where the venue is, unfortunately, and I only saw it late on myself. And apologies, I'm a bit absent-minded, and that comes with old age. And I think it's going to become worse and worse. And I also think there's another problem. It's a temper problem, so you must bear with me for a while. You know? Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm sorry if I'm out of line, and please call me to order because I did not hear the full presentation. But in terms of the MYPD2, you know, the methodology used in the MYPD2, and the revision of electricity tariffs from 25% to 16%, which is very encouraging, and can I say full marks for Eskom to at least acknowledge that we should have a reduction in electricity tariffs because it was really unaffordable and it was bad for the economy, job creation, etc. But when we had the reduction, we And I think the reduction, and that's my question in terms of the reduction, did you use the, did they then revise the cost of the replacement of assets methodology, first of all? Are we moving away from that, the method used in that methodology, the cost of replacement of assets? Can we also then assume, and perhaps more than assume, that Medupi and Kusile and the funding of those power stations that was based on within the MYPD2 that the consumer had to contribute, that finally that this has now been taken care of, the funding of Medupi and Kusile in the MYPD2, and that we won't have the same methodology used in the coming MYPD3. And then coming to the MYPD3, perhaps with your permission, is the elephant in the room in terms of speculation that we've now dealt with funding the major infrastructure cost of Eskom, but that we have the elephant in the room of the proposed nuclear bill and that we might have increases in the MYPD3 for nuclear or not. The information that we have, that it will not be accommodated, and I think it's very serious that we address how we will fund the proposed nuclear plants, perhaps a bit premature, but any information on that would help. And then, with permission, Chair, on the mandate of the four primary acts, if I could just allude you to the National Energy Regulator Act 2004 and the amendments. I think we will perhaps still workshop those acts, Chair, but may I just ask that, in my opinion, I see in my, perhaps I'm wrong or right, but the submission is that the minister's role will be strengthened and that nurse's role will be somehow having a smaller role in terms of the oversight on municipalities, or no oversight at all on the municipal tariffs, that municipalities can be asked in terms of their surcharges asked. And that's of huge concern. Should it not be that this committee should rather make proposals in terms of the proposed act, that we have the strengthening of NERSA's role, the regulator's role? And thank you for the opportunity. And I'm sorry that I'm so unwinded, Chair, so long in my submission.
As part of handover, Chairperson, the next one line was Mr. Smala, was the last. But just to, I think, to add on the question that has been asked by the Honourable Ross, it's for Eskom, NERSA, to explain to us why did they cut, determine 16% and not agree with Eskom. I think that's an important question.
Thank you, Chair. If I can just make a follow-up to my colleague. Chairperson, I'm sorry, I just left this out, and thank you for Mr. Malotta to remind me. Are we then moving in now towards a situation where we will be moving towards inflation-related prices and steer away with in terms of the administered prices, that we will move more to inflation-related prices, seeing that we have now a reduction in tariffs, that we assume that Medupi and Kusile has already been funded through various ways, but also through the consumer, and that perhaps in the MYPD3 that this trend will continue and that we will have, in terms of our price path to be followed, what would your recommendations be?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Earlier was mentioned that some of the licensees did not apply for new licenses for the next financial year, or I just would like to understand that if they are required to submit maximum prices to NERSA for approval, does these non-compliance companies, let me put it, or licensees, do they then apply still for those maximum prices for your approval, or does that just go ahead? I would like to ask maybe some questions towards the CFO's towards the CFO, and looking at your risk that you cannot contain professional staff within your HR division, is that the reason for the high expenditure towards consulting fees? And how are you planning to minimize or to deal with that risk in the future? Are there actual plans to incorporate more skilled personnel in that? Also, I'm just curious, how was it possible for you to bring your electricity side of your budget side actually down with about, is it 2 billion? Two million. I'm just trying to count the zeros. It's from 7.2 to 5.2. And then also your legal fees. If I look 2 years back, how you totally increased your legal fees from 111 to suddenly to 1.6 and now 1.9. What are the reasons for? Is that in your regulatory? That's in page 222, in your booklet. I'm just trying to understand why the legal fees are going that source. Is that in your framework? Is that your negotiations in order to get certain issues on par? I've also seen that you've got a huge section towards temporary staff. Your budget has slightly increased with your temporary staff section. Does that just enlighten me how the increase there and not more into your other side of your normal HR staff presence, you're taking them on board into your normal permanent staff section? Thank you.
The last one, Chairperson. The quick one on NYPD3 and the EPP. What are your timelines? When do you require to have the revised EPP so that you could be able to start with the process of the NYPD3 consultation? Are you comfortable or confident that the revised EPP will be provided to you within the required time frames? And the question that has been asked by Mr. Ross, what influenced your final determination for the 16% electricity tariff? And lastly, the transmission code. There have been concerns that have been expressed in the committee before around the concept of wheeling. I just want to find out from NERSA whether that's an area within your scope of operation, and that's an area that you would be able to make a determination on.
I think I'll allow you, the NERSA, to respond, but it's just an appeal. We are going to have the IRA and NIRA amendments coming here. And I'm rather uneasy that NERSA expresses itself on that. I really would appeal, humbly lying low on my knees to members, let us not be preemptive. We definitely allow, you know, the whole process to go through, even if it means applying to the Speaker's office for extra days if necessary. You see, now the thing, if you start handling things that are still going to be formally submitted to Parliament, I think even ourselves, it procedurally takes us a little bit off the track, you know. So in whatever way you respond, you know, I really want to take you to that into account, because I wouldn't take kindly to the fact that NERSA would respond now to those issues, even the department itself for that matter, Mamzungu. And all of a sudden, when we start processing the amendments, you come up with different positions. Because I'll be the first one to ask, what can I know? You know, why are you somersaulting, you know? Or why are you taking a different position? We need to allow at least that logical, you know, procedural flow of things. I really do also, to all members, commit myself to ensure that there will be a due process, you know, on that. That's why I was even jokingly saying to you that let's work to have together, you know, to if need be, to NEDLAC, because that's where the two amendments are now. As soon as NEDLAC processes them, you know, the next step will be the State Law Advisor's Office to register the amendments and bring them here. In fact, if need be, mostly we'll see what is it that prohibits us to not process those two amendments through public hearings, because they've got a lot of impact, you know, on the public. That I can assure we'll make sure of that. Okay, go ahead, if you could respond to other questions.
Thank you, Chair, and the responses I will handle with both team members, Chair. If I start on the first question that was asked by Member Molotto around stockpiles on the environmental scale. And the question was, are there any guidelines to ESCOM for stockpiling? Yes, Chair, there are guidelines. I can't give the details now of as to X number of days or X number of tons of coal for so many days. However, we do regulate the keeping of stockpiles because it's easy for an entity to then stockpile in fear of coming of an impending war that never happens. And the more they keep in stockpiles, the higher the prices. So we try and keep the stockpiles that right for ensuring that they don't run out of supply, and yet the prices also not impacted negatively. So we do regulate that particular aspect. And Chair, the question was why only China and not India? I think, Chair, we just were remiss. We thought that we can incorporate India into China. But Chair, it's both the two key economies in the East that have increased their energy consumption. And Chair, you'd know that the big thing that they're consuming is coal, which is a primary source of energy in the country. There was a question around would we review tariffs in line from page 19, the risk of the euro debt default. Essentially, the risk of the euro debt default would have had a direct impact on the cost of capital for the utility, and therefore the regulator would have to have borne in mind where the sources of funding would come from and where they would borrow from, and therefore make sure that the cost of capital is adequate for the utility to be able to undertake borrowing and the covenants that would come with that type of thing. So yes, inevitably the tariffs would then have to be reviewed to ensure that there's enough scope for the utility to be able to cover its cost of capital. There was a question on the same page around the issue of gas price references, developments in the Arab world. Now, the way the price of gas is determined, there's a big referencing that goes on in the way you determine the price of gas. For one, it is foreign currency denominated, and it is often referenced to other sources of energy. And normally it would be oil, it would be electricity, it would be heavy fuel oil, diesel, and then there's a fourth thing that they compare it to. So in the U.S. at the moment, the price of gas is referenced to the price of oil. And basically it means you pay the same thing for gas as you pay for oil. That affects the formula in a big way for us. So that those developments in the Arab world do become something that we have to bear in mind when we do our work. The discovery of oil in Africa, our own experience has been that it hasn't affected the price of crude oil in a major way. They just tend to fall in line with the OPEC prices. So, yes, it should signal a benefit for the continent, but thus far, that's not what we have observed, and often would go by the OPEC prices. Yes. And there was a question as well around the 2011 risk on the pipeline. On page 27, yeah. The reason why we had said that the period up to the end of 2011 was the riskiest was because there was a portion of the pipeline that was due for completion in December 2011. And our big fear was that
if it wasn't completed, then all the consequentials would arise, you know. However, the risk has indeed disappeared, because on the 9th of January, in fact, Transnet did launch a part of the pipeline, so that risk has disappeared. So it was high risk, but it was well managed by the operator, but as a regulator as well, we had put up a team that had worked closely with the operators to that particular point to ensure that the risk doesn't materialize as we had feared. So, Chairperson, that would deal with all, through you, all the other questions that followed. So the construction delay costs haven't come up, because the Transnet has been able to deal with those risks at that particular point. Then, Chair, I'll move to the questions around slide 41 that deal with the return of the shareholders. The question was, does the shareholder communicate with the regulator its expected return? Now, as a regulator, although we are obliged to consult, we are, however, not in the same land as the operator. So the shareholder could express his opinion in a number of ways. We do, however, also take our information from a number of other sources. So we look at rating agencies. Particularly rating agency reports are very important, and how they view what shareholder reaction is likely to be. In this particular instance, when MYPD 2 was done, the shareholder did express his views around the expected return at the price determination at that point. And Chairperson, in fact, if one then skips to dealing with the question this side around the outer year of MYPD 2, one of the issues that happened there was that the shareholder did express an opinion that they're happy to receive a lesser return than originally contemplated. And they found a way of expressing that. And that would, of course, have been taken into account by the regulator. However, the regulator took into account a whole lot of other factors. When we did MYPD 2, you'd all recall we were just going into a big build program, which hadn't been executed in the country in a very long time. The best figures that came from Eskom around the capacity to spend capital were available. However, there was an expression of an ambition that that figure could be breached and that higher levels of expenditure could be experienced. As a result, as a regulator, also not being convinced that the numbers were that the expenditure could be pushed much higher, we created the regulatory sharing account so that should the numbers not pan out as projected at the point at which the determination were made, through the regulatory clearing account, the regulator is then able to ensure that the figures are revised and that customers are made to benefit, and the entity is made also to bear some of the costs that might result from its own actions. Chair, the question was asked, why would we be interested in the debt equity ratio of Eskom? It would be exactly for the same reasons you'd be interested in for a private business. If they borrow more from the markets than they have equity, than what we allow for them to be able to service those loans is different compared to what happens when a shareholder contributes the money. And in fact, with a shareholder that's in the form of government, you could actually persuade them to subordinate their requirements to the market, and that would also influence in a big way what you allow for the entity as a revenue. So definitely it is a big consideration. And what we've got in program one is to indicate that we are using a very standard way of looking at the tariff for Eskom, and that these KPIs are put in place for Eskom. But for us as a regulator as well, we need to be able to argue this. The world needs to know how we calculate them so that when they do business in the country, there's regulatory certainty in that sense. Thank you, Chair. So the next set of questions from a member of Sailang were as follows. One related to the period of the MYPD. Eskom is looking to move towards the longer term. As a general trust, we are also very comfortable and happy as a regulator to move towards the longer term. I mean, the PPPs on average are 20 to 25 years, so the shorter cycles are indeed a challenge. We however, would like to proceed with caution.
because we want to say that we've had three attempt determinations so far in the country. We had MIPD 1, we had MIPD 2. And the facts point to the fact that although we are beginning to firm up on long-term projections, there are still challenges. So MIPD 1 was reopened. MIPD 2 was reopened. So yes, we will look at moving towards a five-year cycle as a regulator. However, we'd like quite a number of precautionary measures put in place to enable, you know, we do want the system to move towards the long term, but the ability to protect is still a challenge. And overall, we'd like all of us to be able to do so. We do not need anything to be amended. The EPP allows for longer-term price determination, so that's something that we can do without laws being amended. However, we just, and just from the experience, let's give ourselves an opportunity to make sure that we firm up and stabilize around the projection, and then we can move to longer-term. So as the regulator, we would be also ready to do so. Storage of oil. That's a matter that falls by and large within the purview of the department. All I can say there is that we are aware that the department is in the process of drafting regulations that relate to strategic fuel resources or storage resources. So some law will be put in place in the country that regulates that. For the rest of the questions, however, that have been asked, this material really within the purview of the department, and I would rather request that we flag it and deal with it with the department.
And the committee at some stage will allow the department to come and present that reviewer. Mm-hmm. I'm already aware of it. Mm-hmm. It's coming down the line.
Okay.
Once the department is done with it. Mm-hmm. If you remember what we did in Durban during our visit there, it actually came out very clear from Mr. Mkhize that the department is seized with that. So if you can allow the department to take the whole process through the cabinet, then thereafter it brings it to our attention. Either end of this term, Mamuzungu, depends, or sometime next term. Thank you.
Okay. So there was a question around the 70-30% splitting generation in the country. Chairperson, this is one of those matters that we believe is being addressed through the amendment of the Electricity Regulation Act, and in accordance with your ruling earlier on, one would like to defer that question to that. If you recall, when the Director General presented the rationale for amending the Electricity Regulation Act, amongst others, it was to deal with that issue. So it's a matter that one would defer it to that. Yeah. Security of supply for oil, again, that's a matter that's being addressed by the department, and the Iran questions and all of that, and I'd also like to defer and deflect it for the role of the department. So it would be the same issue as the next on the LPG. Where we say the methodology to be reviewed, we're saying that where the LPG to be brought under the purview of NERSA, mm-hmm. it's something that we'd have to deal with under the maximum pressure methodology. Chairperson, that's still a debate. Yeah. Chairperson, the issue relating to the electricity distributors, withdrawal of licenses, revocation of licenses where operators do not comply. Chairperson, we believe that this is a matter that NERSA has limited authority over, and hence we welcome the amendment of the Act. Were NERSA to do it now, they would have to go to court. There's nothing, however, stopping the regulator from going to court, so it's something that can be considered. The levels of non-compliance, Chair, has been high. And however, as I indicated earlier on, at the moment the regime, if somebody doesn't comply, we audit, we give them an opportunity to comply, and we'll be caught out with that particular, with that certain period of enabling people to comply. The question from Honorable Smaller, the research on oil and gas, Chair, we are very far with that. As soon as it is available, we will advise the committee. We're still in the preliminary stages of that particular exercise. And Chair, through you, can I ask Member Smaller to repeat the question that he had asked around the regulation of the value chain of pulp gas? I missed the question.
Honorable Smaller.
to it with the second set of questions that we asked. Question from member Hadiba. The specific questions around Durban, my own request would be that we come back to the committee around. We didn't come here with that details. I'm not sure who were the HDIs, which particular storage facilities were being spoken about, and all of that. So can we come back to the committee around that? We'll come back and write into the committee around that with your permission, Chair. Suffice to say that as a regulator, we are worried about the introduction of HDIs. Hence, we had spoken earlier on that one amongst the things we plan to do is to make sure that there is adequate reporting and a framework for reporting around the introduction of the HDIs on the part of the existing players.
Hang on. You're still regulators, not service. Not delivery on some of the things. Honourable members, on that point, on Friday we were supposed to have the presentation of the preliminary report on our oversight visit to Mthatha and Durban. And that would have come out very, very clear. I appeal that let us handle that not from a regulatory perspective. The one, it has a risk of constricting us, on constraining us, you know, because we'll be talking regulation. Whereas if you look at it from a broader perspective of overseeing the value chain in the liquid fuel supply, particularly, you know, oil and the related you know, products, then regulation can come in. So please monitor our program so that when we have that reporting done, then you can join us. But your contribution would be from a regulatory perspective. In fact, if you remember, one of the members, we agreed that we will even handle that report in two stages, which is quite unusual. But because of its significance, we must have the preliminary reporting. We bring in as many of the role players which were there, talk. Then, out of their inputs, we then can have a final, another stage whereby the committee can finalize it, but taking on board whatever has been said, particularly with the intentions of molding or formulating recommendations now by the committee. Sorry to elaborate, but it shows that we are taking, you know, that matter quite seriously, you know, storage. But it's part of a number of, you know, highlights and challenging highlights for that matter within the value chain in that sector. Thanks.
Then if I proceed, there was also a question of employer of choice. Chairperson, the issue of being an employer of choice is a perennial challenge for all employers in South Africa. We will do our best as a regulator to ensure that we attract and retain the best skills. However, at some point, when people want to move, there's nothing you can do to stop them. In this particular instance, the person in question has served the regulator for about 4 years. For 5 years, and normally that's the going rate. If you have a professional person staying longer than 5 years in an organization, you're very lucky. This was an African female CA, highly in demand, but she did serve the organization well for the time that she was there.
That's why I'm worried, because I remember she was an African woman.
Thank you, Chair. And then the question of the ROMPCO, R-O-M-P-C-O. Chairperson, this is an abbreviation that's found in the agreement, the suite of agreements that was entered into when the pipeline was built. If my own memory serves me well, it's something like Republic of Mozambique and South Africa Piped Gas Company. So it was abbreviated to ROMCO, but it's a long name. It's an SPV that was created to deal with that particular issue. The question about slide 10, slide 100, potential shortage of LPG, maximum pricing methodology needs to be reviewed. Chairperson, I've been at pains to point this out. As a regulator, we are enjoined to ensure that operators recover prudently incurred costs and they're able to stay in business to continue to render the services. However, that they charge prices to consumers that consumers can afford. So it's a balance that we always strive to achieve and to maintain. And therefore, it's not possible to answer a question in whose favor and say in favor of X. It's in favor of the balance that we have to maintain as a regulator. Always ensuring that consumers are not overreached, but that operators also are able to continue to stay in business. Which leads me to the next question, Chair, whether or not, as a regulator, we are captured by operators or licenses and are dictated to. We believe as the National Energy Regulator, as I highlighted our principles, that we are objective in the manner that we assess that applications that are forwarded to us. We believe that we are not captured by any of the operators. In fact, as you recall, the specific instance of M1PD2, the initial application by the operator was set at 45% increase, and then it came down to 35%. When it was submitted to the regulator, it was at 35%, and the regulator granted 25%. I also just mentioned that this year, Transnet applied for an 83% increase, and they were given 31%. So we honestly and truly believe that as a regulator, we're acting independently and objectively and in the interest of the economy of the country. However, we also are mindful of the fact that perceptions do become reality. And as a regulator, we must go out there and actively, proactively manage perception about the regulator. And it's one of the things we seek to do under Program 6 and all that organizational program of establishing ourselves as a credible regulator. Chairperson, the question from Honorable Matibela. I'm also going to, through you, check with Ms. Matibela whether she was asking the question whether or not the regulator does approve the guidelines for municipal tariffs. And if that was the question, yes, we do approve the guidelines for municipal tariffs. Yes. And then FDE, the point made there was that the electrification happens at 20 amps and yet FDE is at 50 kilowatts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The electrification point deals with the infrastructure, with the network. Free basic electricity relates to the consumption. So even if a person has a 20 amp, they can still be given a 50 kilowatt free basic electricity. In fact, my recollection is that the figure was moved to 100 as part of mitigation of the MYPD increase. Now, there is a challenge out there that we are aware of, that not all municipalities are able to implement and afford to pay for the FDE at the rate at which those were agreed. But that again goes to the number of players, their financial strength, and all of those challenges. In fact, when it comes to inclining block tariffs, we have observed that smaller municipalities are battling to implement IBT, and so it keeps justifying the issue of whether or not the distribution industry of electricity in the country is optimally organized. Yes. Chairperson, if I go to Mr. Ross's questions, I had dealt with the question of how we got to the 16% on the outer year of the MYPD process. We did not look at the depreciation at all. It was more the return of the shareholder. And Chairperson, I invite members, and perhaps we should just organize that we send the reasons for decision on this particular aspect. We have posted them on our website, but perhaps through your kind offices, so we can send it through and it can be circulated to members of the committee. Chairperson, when you were addressing all those preemptive issues, I was hoping that you'd cover MYPD3 in that. There were a number of questions from members that were details that relate to MYPD3 that we are not in a position to answer because they anticipate a determination that must be made in a particular way at a particular time. So with your permission, Chair, I request that we'll be exempted from responding around the nuclear build and its impact on the tariffs in MYPD3, whether or not we've gone through the worst of the major build program, therefore the tariffs all of those questions would require us to anticipate a response that has to be taken after a particular process is followed, Chair, and therefore we as indicated, can we through your permission not respond to those?
No, it's not about my permission. It's about the logic and the legislative provisions for that. We cannot handle things, you know, that are very sensitive, which will regret having handled them at this stage in time. It's as logical as that. It's not for Sanjay Galana because he's the chair of the committee to push you to do things that are outside the legislative ambit. Simple. At the end of the day, you will come and report to us, you know, the way which you have molded, you know, MYPD3. At this stage in time, even before you finalize that, I don't know when we're going to do that, Eric, we are keen, I think when the department brings the revised electricity policy, that you take us through MPD 1 and 2, because they are public, they've already been instruments for public consumption, but you have a basic understanding such that when you come back and take us through MIPD 3, we would have had a common understanding because we have joined this committee at different times. Now, I wouldn't be doing things that are outside the legislative ambit. Rest assured. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So that would deal with all the questions that the nuclear build question, the why the 15% and why didn't we agree with Eskom, and are we moving towards inflation-related prices? All of those questions would then fall in that category. If I then go through to the questions asked by Member Smola, again, there was the question related to the non-compliant licensees and whether or not they do come back and apply for approval of maximum prices. Often that's how we pick them up. However, at the moment, we are going to embark on a process of going out there and just investigating the market ourselves so that we just check all the players and make sure that everybody who's out there is licensed. But often how we pick them up is when they apply for one or other thing to the regulator. The maximum prices, Chair, are not yet in force because the agreement persists until 2014. So the methodology is approved in readiness for implementation in 2014. So the maximum prices, maximum pricing methodology for pipe gas will become operational from 2014 later in the year. And then there was a question around the budget. The figures on the budget, and I missed some of those questions. I'm going to ask that to assist, for CFO to acting CFO to assist, and then I'll catch up some of them.
Thank you, Chair. I think I would start with the first one. That was the consultant fees, mainly on the electricity industry. Now that increased from 10.4 to 11.3 million, and that is due to the technical nature of the regulatory work that needs to be done. And then another reason as well is that in most instances the projects undertaken are groundworking initiatives where similar work in that fashion has not been done. So that's the reason for the increase in the consulting fees for the electricity industry. The CAPEX for the electricity industry, the value of 7.2 million that dropped to 5.2 million, the decrease of 2 million. That's mainly contributable to CAPEX is something that you'll buy in 1 year. If you've bought it, it's there. You're not going to invest in it again. So that's mainly, as far as we see, the computer hardware, software, and some furniture for the previous year. So that's why we had the drop in the following year. The following question was regarding the legal fees. That increased from 2.8 to 3.3 million. That is mainly due to current court cases.
that we expect that will continue in the following financial year, as well as potential litigation against NERSA. Then there was the last question that I've got regarding the temporary staff on the HR side. That one increased from 1.8 million to 3.5 million. That's an increase of 1.7 million. Now, there's two reasons. The one reason is the current structure does not fully support the operations of all the various divisions in NERSA. And the second one is there was a reduction, a reduction of work performed by consultants. The consultants decreased by 1.3 million. And that's where we need the temporary staff. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, if I may amplify, I see there's a follow up.
Just amplify it first. Just amplify it first.
Oh, thank you, Chair. In relation to the legal fees, Chair, I wanted to just point out that we have made an interesting observation in the organization. Things have been fairly quiet for the last 4 years, and then I suppose because it was early years of NERSA. We have taken now some major decisions, and we've had them challenged in court, in the Supreme Court. So that what that did was to rebase our own projections around legal fees. And unfortunately, legal fees are just contingent in their nature. You can never predict where the matter will end. But I just want to point out to the committee that we've been taken to court on two major cases that we've just taken decisions on as the energy regulator. And of course, we're excited about it, so we're not at all safe.
Excited about it? Honorable smile. Chairperson, it's not about paying more consulting fees. In the risk analysis, one of the issues that they identify is that you've got a problem in the ability to attract and develop, motivate and retain experienced regulatory staff. So what I'm asking is that the reason for going into your consulting fees? Are you unable to get personnel or people that are experienced enough or academically up in standards to help you do your work, and therefore the consulting route? Because that's what I'm asking, because what I would like to see is that the risk, that it's one of the risk factors that diminish from NERSA, and the consulting fees actually comes down. And what are your actual plans into bringing that risk factor down? It's not about the increase in consulting fees from 10 to 11 or 12 million, but I would rather see the capabilities of the NERSA maybe being strengthened, maybe not going to legal actions or courts or whatever that are.
In-house capacitation.
Yeah. Chairperson, broadly speaking, Honorable Smaller is on point. We do use consultants to close the intellectual and professional gaps we do have over time, and as we appoint the consultants would go out. We are looking as an organization, Chair, to doing an institutional review that would enable us again to rebase the organizational skills and competences and recruit at the right levels and make sure that we are able to then retain people going forward. But we do use consultants, Chair, to just close those particular gaps that we do have.
Honourable members, I still have my barrage of questions, but it's too many enough to take a break if you are finished.
If, with your permission, can we close with the last set of questions that came from Member Molotov, and then we can then break and come back. And the question really, there were three, they related to MIPD3, what the timelines are there. We're looking at the normal timelines. MIPD3 would have to be implemented by 1 April 2015. And normally the application is filed with the regulator in September of the preceding year. And the other procedural issues will sort within the timelines that are available. We are in touch with the department around the EPP, and we should reach some finality quickly with the department around that, and then the rest of the processes will kick in. Chair, there was also a question asked about third-party access in electricity and whether wheeling is possible in this country. Wheeling is possible, Chair. There are guidelines around that, and there is a methodology for calculating charges for wheeling. We have approved recently two such applications, and there was serious contestation around the charges that were approved, but we have approved that. We're comfortable with our decision.
Honourable members, my dear honourable members, leg stretch, tea break, and others. 7 minutes, please.
Thank you. I'll talk to you around.
Honourable members, can we start? Honourable members, can we start? Honourable members, can we start? Can you persuade them? Thank you.
Thanks very much.
I suppose the Nassau had dispensed with responding to all the questions hitherto. I have a few questions from my side as well. Let me preface that first. I see the emerging term ESI we've long been toying around and grappling with EDI. Now there's ESI. I suppose the two are complementary and linked. But then you then said, I don't know which slide, but you referred to investment or facilitating or promoting investment in ESI. Then my question is, what about EDI? Why not ensure that you do that as well? That's number one. Number two, you've made mention of free basic electricity, but you didn't mention free basic alternative energy. Any reason for that? In a position to share with us how far is the ministry with regards of formulating this prescription or guidelines, you know, or whatever you can call it, on the end user forum. And I also therefore say this because when we were dealing with free basic electricity and free basic alternative energy, I think there are about two presentations whereby some forum, stakeholder forum, was mentioned something like a regional electricity forum. I'm sure whoever is responding will share with us how these two are linked or not linked. The other area one is quite keen to check with NERSA is about community outreach or education or whatever you can say. You find that in each and every briefing by various entities and even the department, the reference is made to public education, community interaction, or community outreach. My question is, at what stage are we going to see an integrated community outreach strategy? Or are you arguing that it is appropriate for NERSA when it does that community outreach. It does it. On its own, or does it aim to link with other stakeholders who, if it is to? In terms of resourcing the organization, can NAFSA share with us, just in general terms, how does it aim to resource the organization? Not in terms of finances, but human capital. But also, surely, the NAFSA cannot be everywhere. And some of the innovative ways is to upscale its ICT applications to be able to monitor. Have you thought about that? If yes, generally or in very brief, what will you be putting, you know, on the table or introducing? Thank you.
Yes, Jay, thank you. I just would like to understand where the role of the regulator will come into play should local authorities, the municipalities, get into agreements with IPPs to purchase electricity from its generating plants, and that cost is at a megaplex rate, especially if it's now from a greener source, and the variation where Eskom offers much higher incentives to the same generating plants, but other opponents, like the solar plant at Toes River for one, Eskom and Toes River, and on the other hand, Ekurhuleni and the sugar industry, the cane from that side, and you regulating that section and determining maybe what is affordable to us as a supplier. Chairperson, then when you spoke about ESI, one of the program strategic objectives that was set over was to make sure that the municipalities are sustainable within the ring fence electricity of their businesses, and to ensure that it is sustainable, to deliver that supply. A recent question asked by myself towards the minister was pertaining to the minimum of the license agreements that are being put forward by NAFSA towards municipalities, that X percentage must go towards sort of the maintenance of that supply in order to make sure that we do not have blackouts, which is happening due to that, or the interruption of supply due to aging of infrastructure. What are you doing? There was a big sum of municipalities, or most municipalities do not comply, or local authorities do not apply in this. What are you doing to enforce that licensing agreement? And are you willing to revoke the licensing agreement with the local authorities should they not uphold that license agreement? Yeah.
NAFSA, please.
Thank you, Chair. But there are still more questions.
Chairperson, the first question from yourself was the question of the ESI. The ESI is an all-encompassing phrase that means the electricity supply industry covers generation, transmission, and distribution. So when we talk about investment in the ESI, we're talking about investment in the full value chain of electricity. So we might not have mentioned EDI specifically, but it is covered indirectly because ESI is a full value chain. and Chairperson currently the focus is on even ensuring that there's enough generation in the country to meet demand of electricity consumers. FBE, free basic electricity, why didn't you mention alternate energy and Chairperson, the FBE issue as far as we go is a FBEA is a policy matter for the department. We mentioned FBE because so far as electricity goes, there are tariff implications of the policy, and we need to enable the policy being implemented in the manner that the tariffs are set. And the other alternative energy forms that are used directly by consumers tend not to fall within our purview as a regulator, so we do not get involved too much, but when they do, we will look at the lessons learned from the electricity tariffing that enabled FBE to ensure that that is also enabled. So that's the only reason why we wouldn't have mentioned it. End user forum chair, the colleagues from the department will possibly respond on that particular aspect. However, chair, the specifics of the end user forums are what is required by the Electricity Act. The Electricity Regulation Act requires all operators in the country to create end-user forums. So it was essentially a mechanism to ensure that operators interact with their customers and that issues are not all escalated to a national level. And that was the rationale behind that. And that's what we're looking to establishing as an obligation under the Electricity Regulation Act. So the Regional Electricity Forum you possibly were referring to was possibly something from history where when the EDI restructuring process was on course, there were regional electricity forums that were formed between the states, the role players within a particular region, and that tended to involve EFCOM, municipalities, province, and a whole number of other players in a particular region. And that was quite useful even for other government departments to utilize for consultation purposes for other things. So, Chair, I'm not sure if those persist. One or two provinces are more that they've kept that form or in a slightly revised form of provincial electricity or energy forum, but I'm not sure if they still exist in their original form. Chair, they would link to the end user forums to the extent that they would be, the end user forums are per area. So you're an operator, you operate in this particular area, you create a forum for your customers in that area. You know, if the idea is to then escalate it to a provincial level so that issues can be dealt with on a provincial basis, that's something that should be possible to check. And as far as community outreach goes, our own preference chair would be an integrated approach, and we have been talking to the department. In fact, to the extent that we've gone out, we've always gone out definitely with the Department of Energy, where there's still a challenge with some of the operators, so ESCOM tends to go and do community outreach programs on its own, but with the Department of Energy and NERSA, we've always gone out together to do those things, and definitely the integrated approach is the way to go, because often when you arrive at a community, the questions range across government demarcations, so it's better if you go together as a factor. So it's something that we would love to support and would encourage other players to do it in that manner. We will develop our own program and make sure that we integrate it to at least the department's program and see how we can integrate with other players in the energy space to make sure that we go out together. Chair, you asked a question around resourcing the organization from a human capital point of view. We are always looking at innovative ways of filling positions and recruiting. Chairperson, we're also now looking at developing the pipeline. Because regulation is not an existing discipline. It's unlike law, where you study law to become a lawyer.
you don't study regulation to become a regulator. It's a field that cuts across four disciplines: economics, law, engineering, and finance. So we do have very dedicated training programs that we subject our staff to after people have been identified as people who are appropriate to come into the organization to sharpen them as regulator, and there's continuous training that we provide. In fact, we run a program where staff members are allowed to register for courses, a whole degree course, and the condition is that they must pass, because they are more useful to the organization when they pass. And so we have tried to put in place a number of incentives to attract people and retain them once they're in the organization. But we will continue to relook and revise and improve those. In terms of ICT, we embarked on a very expensive project called the Regulatory Reporting Manual. And a big part of that was to ensure that there is an electronic interface between the regulator and the regulated entities in order to cut down on the resources required to go out and check whether or not people, what they're saying and what they're submitting is true. So whilst that doesn't replace the need for and the role for an audit process, the regulatory reporting manuals where they are working, we're finding that it has saved ourselves and the licenses a lot of time, because people do electronic submission. We've implemented the financial one, and we are refining it now. So in electricity with Eskom, we're fairly there. We're now refining that particular process. Those processes with municipalities, we started with the top six and then added the other four, and we're now progressively rolling it down to all the other municipalities.
With the top six being metros.
The top six being the metros, Chair. Yeah. Followed by the secondary cities, the key secondary cities as well. With the petroleum pipeline players, for instance, we found that most of them have, all five, six major oil companies have linked up on the RRM, and now they're submitting electronically. So we are finding that very useful, and we're now looking to expand the reporting regulatory manual to deal with non-financial issues. So the first phase was financial, and we're finding that that's working. Now we're expanding it to non-financial aspects. And then, Chair, there are other areas where we can't avoid physical inspections, and that's in relation to infrastructure stuff, and we'll have to find ways of being innovative around that as well. But we are looking at optimizing ICT, and we have spent quite a bit of money in that space as well, and we think there's been big value that's been derived. And on the questions around from Member Smaller, around the role of the regulator, well, local government does IPPs. Now, the regulator would be involved, because even with IPPs, there still has got to be an PPA, a power purchase agreement. So either the power purchase agreement is entered into by municipality or by Eskom, it still has to be approved by the regulator. And would then assess the facts per municipality. Now, the megaflex tariff you mentioned is a specific tariff that applies to Eskom. We do not necessarily categorize tariffs in that way. So we'd look at the facts of that particular municipality, the cost of production, the location of that municipality, and approve the tariff in accordance with our rules that ensures that the operator continues to exist, however, that the customers are not overreached as well. So the two specific instances you mentioned, we can come back with the details thereof around how the differences exist. But the tariff differentials in the country exist before the IPPs arrive. So that's the base from which we are going to depart. So it's not going to be possible to say all IPPs, as long as they are solar, they must be equal in terms of price. There's going to be a whole lot of considerations that go into to how we get to the final price, to the final tariff. And then the issues of whether or not the regulator can proceed and whether or not the regulator is prepared to revoke licenses of operators, particularly distributors, who continue to disrespect license conditions. The short answer is yes. Unfortunately, up until now, it does not happen. And again, it's not happened because as a regulator, we thought that instead of coming with a big sledgehammer, let's start with baby steps. So an audit was done, a technical audit was done in 2007 by the regulator, discovered huge levels of non-compliance. The regulator then went through and worked with all the municipalities to get them to develop remedial plans. And then the regulator had to come in to assess whether those remedial plans have been implemented. And that exercise has only been completed in the year that we are on. Again, given the multiplicity, and we didn't even do all of the distributors in the country. Now the the regulator will have to take a decision as to how they how do they proceed against those that have persisted even beyond the second term of implementing remedial action plans. And Chairperson, this is also another one of those where there's so much detail. It would be better if we just dealt with it alone as a subject and just bring the team from here to come and share with you what they have experienced on the ground.
Thank you very much. Any further queries and comments from the members? Honorable Ross and Honorable Smola.
Thank you, Chair. Hello. Thank you, Chair. Just to note that I'm very glad that Honorable Smola asked the last question in terms of the IPPs and how they will link and price. And I think the explanation will help a lot, because we have a lot of questions from people who say, I'm in this municipality and I'd like to add to the to electricity capacity, and how do we do it? And I think that is a very good question. And thank you for the answer. I think it gives us a lot of clarity. But just in regard to price uncertainty or certainty, the Chairperson, through you and perhaps to the department as well, I fully agree with the Chairperson that says a lot of the issues that I think that we're trying to establish perhaps from NERSA should be dealt with in our pricing policy. And perhaps, Chairperson, just to note that I think time is of the essence that we need to refine that pricing policy, just to make sure that we have some certainty in terms of when we get to the MYPD3 stages, that we can tell business, yes, this is what we expect. Perhaps we can't get a commitment from this, to say it will be inflation-related, and I was hoping to have that commitment. But we know it's a difficult thing to and as the Chairperson said, to preempt logic, and I mean, there's a lot of circumstances that might change, but and also some certainty as to the funding of nuclear and all that. It's questions that people ask us, and it's unfortunate that we can't respond now, and that we really would like to. But I think the Chairperson is correct to say that we should perhaps through the department then look at our pricing policy and then interact with you at that stage also. And then also to the another critical issue, Chair, which I agree you're quite right to say, let's wait for the report on our oversight visit to Natal, that we have that report in terms of the fuel price and the increase in that fuel pricing, because that's also time is of the essence. People would like to know, where are we heading towards the fuel price? And we know, especially the gas price is also linked, as you correctly said, that Minister said, linking to the fuel price. If we get some clarity in terms of what can we do perhaps to alleviate this massive fuel price? Because there's an international component, and just to note, and I'm sorry if I take a bit of time, that there's market sentiment in the international domain which is driven by fear of lack of supply. And sometimes people say, you know, it's driven by the bigger oil companies and OPEC to inflate the prices. And that, and I know our refineries are more or less price takers. And then what we can, then there's the domestic aspect, which is the fuel levy and all that. And I think it's just important that as the Chairperson indicated, that we will have this discussion in our pricing policy, and that at that stage we'll interact with NERSA. But it's just that the public expects us to know something about it, and we should give them some guidance, and that we are still in a position of uncertainty as to the regulation of electricity. Has Medupi and Kusilian now finally been sort of funded by the public in terms of tariffs or not? And also the fuel price, are we moving into a certain direction that we say, yes, we have to influence the fluctuations in the international oil price, and how do you do it? And there are some very clever people that can make some recommendations. But I believe through you, Chair, that when we discuss our electricity pricing policy, that I think we should come up with very proactive ideas and interact with NERSA. But it's just time is really of the essence that we give some clarity to the public. And it puts us in an awkward position sometimes, and we seem to feel a bit, when we address big meetings, that you'd like to give people more clarity. And it's sometimes, but so far, I'd just like, in our closing remarks, to say that the interaction with NERSA has been very, very fruitful and open and transparent, and that we appreciate that.
Okay, Honorable when I was moving towards Honorable Smala, with Honorable Slough being recognized, it's interesting when you say public. Yeah, because it depends which public are you referring to. Honorable Smala.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Through you, we did request some information, but I think further information that must be asked through to them is to say that it seems like they are busy with a whole lot of research programs, impact studies, evaluation reports, and it would be good to have an indication on what are those research programs that you are doing, and maybe time frames for completion, so that we know that you are doing X and it's going to be available at Y. So it will also assist as a monitoring tool to maybe not ask certain questions, that we know that these informations are out there and that we can expect to deal with those things. So a request through you, Chair, so that we just get some sort of a program regarding that part of their program. Thank you.
Chairperson, we have two regulators in the electricity or in the energy producing power. We have the nuclear, and we have NERSA. What is the thinking as we go forward? Because I think it's time we must begin to think in long term. Especially with the introduction now of the IPPs in around alternative energy, who will regulate them? Do we want to form the third regulator, or do we want to merge even the two to form one big regulator that will deal with the energy space? And I'm thinking ahead. I know at the moment there isn't a decision yet in that respect, but where do we want to go in this space?
Well, I'm not surprised. That's very much like you.
Well, it reminds me here that I have actually not even mentioned PASA as the third one.
Let me repeat, that's very much like you to be visionary. I'd like to make an input on that, but we'll listen to NERSA first.
Thank you, Chair. We have noted the other comments with appreciation, and we will avail a schedule that indicates when our research work comes to an end and when the reports are available, so that the committee can oversee that as well. Chairperson, in relation to the question from Member Slough, the colleagues from the department can possibly respond to the need for a nuclear regulator as distinct from an energy regulator. I have the vague idea that there's some international obligations that force us to have those two regulators, a separate regulator, but colleagues from the department can clarify on that. The renewables fall under the scope of the energy regulator. And in fact, to that extent, we have just established a regulatory framework for monitoring the renewables. And renewable energy is just another primary source of energy. So like coal, and we do not have a special regulator for coal, there is not a particular need to have a special regulator for renewable energy as such. And the energy regulator powers tend to be sufficient to deal with issues that arise out of renewable issues. Mostly they're of a commercial nature and would go to the financial issues. And to the extent that there are environmental issues that arise, then the normal environmental regulator would kick in and those types of considerations. So, Chairperson, I'm not sure, gazing into the future, what the format of the regulators would be in the country, but just to assure the committee that definitely renewables are catered for and they won't fall into the cracks. We have approved a framework as an ASA, and we were also saying we're looking forward to the first report that would come out of that particular regulatory framework or oversight framework that we have developed. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, thanks very much. I think once again, the deliberations of today have not just exposed that we need. Oh no! Before I do that, the Department of Energy, Kolomomzo, is at 10 now.
Thank you, Chair.
No, in anticipation that you may have not been prepared for all the questions that will take into account, but at least try your best.
I think it does. No, it does work as long as you stay away. This is now putting pressure on me that I must say a lot. I would have been given a mic for myself. Chairperson, I was hoping that I wasn't going to say anything as an observer today. But I think most of what I just indicated here, which I indicated on my notes here, NERSA has made some responses. Which one is complaining now? Oh, unless you unplug, you can't unplug it either. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I think Chairperson, just as a start, I'd like to say that we have noted the need for us to. Who is supposed to go with me or each? It's agreeing to that. Which one? This one? No, the laptop.
There we go.
Okay, let's move this side. Chairperson, I was just saying that we have noted as a department the need for our briefing together with NERSA on the issues of the latest amendments to the Act, especially the ERA and the RERA, and also the issue on the pricing policy. I will take that up with my principal. The ROMCO issue has been responded to. Yes, our involvement as a department in a way is actually sitting with the 25% share that the EGAS has got in ROMCO. So I think that will come out more clearer when they present their threat plan in the next 2 weeks or so. The issue of the additional regulators, on a personal note, I think I'll leave that to the politicians. But all I think the department is going to be working on is to make sure that nothing falls in between the cracks, like NERSA is saying. Nuclear does tend to have its own way of dealing with things, which is not as much, it's very close to what the general electricity in terms of, I mean, the general other forms of energy like your gas and your petroleum and everything is doing. So it does become a bit tricky if we have to combine it with the rest of what we're doing, because they've got their own ways of dealing with the nuclear environment. On the issue of the NMPP line fill, just want to make, I'm not sure if it has been presented to this committee, but the Minister of Finance and our Minister, they did concur on the payment of the close to about 1.4 billion rand, if I'm not mistaken, on the line fill for the NMPP. That one has been done. We've avoided using actually adding anything on the levies on the petrol to pay for that, because what we needed to do was we needed stock that will fill the whole pipeline from beginning to end, so that when you start pushing the product, you have to have something in the pipeline for it to start flowing. So
So that product that is sitting there, it is still the property of government in terms of the fact that SFF is oversight on that, which needs to be disposed in terms of what we're working on now between ourselves, National Treasury, and SFF. When it comes to the issue of storage capacity for refined products, that does raise a concern for the department, because currently we don't have any specific regulations or laws that compel the industry to hold specific stocks. That is the issue. And the whole, other than the Petrol SA role in this industry, the whole of this of the petroleum industry belongs to the private sector. So it is up to them to say, we want to stock so much stock, otherwise we want to tie up our money for this kind of period in terms of finished products that should actually be dispersed and going to the end user. So it's that kind of a debate that we are still having with them. That's the introduction, of course, or the review of the strategic policy, stocks policy, because we're trying to make that now law. Just to mention that at the moment, the 25 days that I think some of the honourable members have seen in some of our reports, the 25 days is just an agreement of which deals only with what is happening in the coastal storage, which is happening with our refineries in Durban, and that applies to them. The other guys, they just keep as much stock as they would like to at particular time. Also, the 20-year liquid fuels infrastructure plan, that is also supposed to address that in terms of what is the capacity of the country's infrastructure anyway, starting from there. That's the liquid fuels audit that they were doing, the refineries audit that they were conducting. So it needs to tell us what is the capacity of the country at the moment, and then we'll be able to come up with a better plan and also better legislation to address that. The audit itself, if I remember, the last time it was reported at ESCO, that the draft report, I think, has been finalized, but now it has to go back to the main role players, the industry and government, to look at then what does this mean. So I think they're in that process of finalizing those negotiations. We are hoping that within the next, hopefully, by mid-year, the mid-financial year, that process will be finalized and we'll be able to table that to Cabinet and come and present to this committee. The issue of potential shortage of LPG, the development of regulations in the department, and why LPG is not regulated by NERSA at the moment. All I can say is, at this stage, government, in terms of the Department of Energy, has got the responsibility of developing regulations, which we have just done. So the issue here is who implements. It's going to be implemented by the department, it's going to be implemented by NERSA. But I have to make mention that with the discussions on this thing in one of our meetings as well, the DG, if I'm not mistaken, did indicate that she is actually looking at consolidating our regulatory environment. So it probably would be part of those discussions. But right now, I cannot be certain and say it is going to happen like that. Coming back to the issue of Regional Electricity Forum, unfortunately, Chairperson and other members, I don't have a definite answer in terms of what are the plans of the electricity area in terms of that. We haven't discussed that in our mention meetings, or even if we did, maybe I've forgotten, but I hope I haven't. But that one, we can make sure that you do get some responses, even if it's just an email to Secretariat just to advise on what that process is. We follow it on up and get to the department. The same with our community outreach programs. We are, as NERSA has indicated, we are, starting from last year, what we are doing, we're trying very hard to make sure that whatever public forums that we go to, we get our SOEs involved. Apart from the fact of the funding part of it, it also gives us an opportunity so that they get both the role of the government and as well as the role of the SOEs in terms of that particular environment. As it is now, even on Friday, I'm sure the DG is meeting with the CEOs of all our entities, and one of the agenda items is talking to issues of public participation and community outreach programs that we'll be undertaking this year going forward. There is something I wanted to do, but now my computer has given up on me, on the issue of the last one was the issue of the the powers of the minister versus the powers of NERSA with the new amendment. The reason I want to read it because it's been asked a number of times in terms of what is the implication of the latest amendment to the Energy Regulator Act. The last response that was given as a department, which has been approved by our bosses, so I can comfortably read it in public, is that the proposed amendment to the Electricity Regulation Act of 2006 does not necessarily give the minister new powers. Section 10G of the Act empowers the minister to approve deviations from the IRP. On the proposed amendment, Section 10G has been deleted and the new section is inserted, providing the linkage between the regulator and the minister in terms of the deviation from the IRP. It must be noted that the minister can issue a Section 34 determination only with the concurrence of the regulator, and as such, he does not have unlimited power. That is basically the response. So it's a call. My interpretation of this statement is that it is a joint response or the joint decision between the ministry and the regulator. Yes. But yes, I do appreciate that it needs more details in terms of discussion. What does that mean?
Amos Longo, from it, please.
Sorry, sir?
No. Continue, but just make sure that I'm still chairing the meeting.
Oh, okay. I think, Chair, those are the issues which I just noted. Yeah. I think those are the issues that just hasn't been up of the department, Chair.
Thank you very much. Well, you did more than I expected. I thought you would just pick up things that were referred to the department, but thanks in any case. Honourable members, let's taper to the close now. I would like us to keep watch of this, improved community outreach approach that it should be done in an integrated way. I hope when we interact with ESCOM in future, we'll reinforce that, and also ESCOM is listening. Last week, I had a presentation by ESCOM. In fact, I'm sorry, it was not a presentation in my constituency. We're actually setting up an end-user forum department because we couldn't wait because of the pressure on the ground. But when we're preparing for it, even my own comrades, sorry to say comrades, ESCOM is still not that much trusted on the ground. Now, if ESCOM wants to go out on its own, as if it exists on its own, that's a bit of a problem. So we have to be insistent, honorable members, on an integrated approach. Whilst each and every party would have to do some of the things on their own, but the integrated approach is very important because ours is about ensuring sustainable supply of energy. Whoever does that, it's coincidental and consequential. One had to explain that even if ESCOM is a private company, but the shareholder is government, that's the level. You know, I'm just talking one area which I feel that it has to be taken into account in order to ensure that we dispel these things. One other area of concern is the one of the insufficient data in license and tariff applications. That links up with some of the concerns we have indicated about lack of policy to impose penalties and things. But the emphasis here is that I've already taken the initiative of looking around and ensuring that over and above what I would expect you to be doing, that you should have verification authority and capacity. Much of the capacity angle is on your shoulders, but the authority, I'm sure you'd agree, you know, we have a role to play to ensure that you have the verification authority such that when applications are submitted to you, all the information that's brought in
You're not shaking heads that we can't get, we're not in a position to verify this and that, you know. And also, that also was triggered by this exclusive use of tariffs for capital expansion. Honourable members, I'm going to take that up a little bit more in detail as we move along. We've got to be clear to what Hanan does. You know, we've got to be clear. Because if tariffs are for certain usages, rather let's be influenced by NERSA's way of, you know, allocating of resources, you know, appropriate for each sector. Because we find it that at Antowat, we can't hold our arms and not ensure that there's remedial, you know, action there too. Another area that's becoming clear is that once we're dealing with NERSA as a regulatory authority, more and more in our deliberations, it's beginning to get clear that we need to grapple with the regulatory environment or frameworks in the energy sector. And I'm sure we'll give ourselves some time at some stage to address that in that way, Mamuzungu. Obviously, NERSA will always be part of that, if not the primary organization in that. As one was captioning it here, I was saying from electricity to energy. Because at this stage in time, even if you have piped, petroleum, but still you much more seen as almost 90%, if I'm correct, as an electricity regulator. Whereas we want to ensure appropriate and adequate regulation, both in concept, practice, legislation, and other things of the energy sector as a whole. So, honourable members, I think my closing remarks is just to appeal, let's hold hands and ensure that, you know, as we move along in this roadmap, we do get, by the close of this term of Parliament, happy that we've done our best to ensure the regulation. Of course, NERSA will be doing its best as well, expectedly, to take us through or provide ideas, trigger ideas on that. And on that note, let me thank everyone for coming and hope to hope to see you tomorrow at 9 here. Just next door we'll be having Sanedi. Let me just prime you right now. After consulting with the senior management of the department, it seems the SARI, unfortunately, is not yet ready. Please, let's stay with that. But the fact that we have put SARI on the list means that we'll be keenly alert that SARI, once it's ready, it can come. I know. Ah, my brother, honourable, I know you would come. But look, it's because of you, in any case, who makes us, you know, alert that SARI would come. Mamzuzu, I see you've got your hand up. Yes, please save me from my honourable members before they leave.
Chair, as I indicated in the morning, that we were having a problem with someone coming to them. It looks like Mrs. Modise Mohadi. He's got a meeting tomorrow afternoon to represent the DG here in Cape Town. So I've asked her to come in the morning. So unfortunately, you might not get a presentation today. She'll have to come through with it tomorrow morning. So she's just going to have to take an earlier flight and be here to do the study tomorrow.
For now, we'll take it from there. But you are very much aware, but you are very, very alert to the fact that SARI must come and share with us, and we see how SARI integrates its work, you know, henceforth, you know, in the renewable energy sector. With those words, thanks very much, everyone, for coming. The meeting stands adjourned.